The Preston and Steve Daily Podcast is presented by Acme. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors, and the official supermarket of MMR's Preston and Steve Show.
93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast. And now, Preston and Steve's news update with Kathy Romano.
Today is Thursday, July 19th. Kathy is out. I'll be handling the duties. We're going to start with this. An intense fire in Morton, Delaware County destroyed a Catholic school that served the community for more than 50 years and caused residents to be evacuated from their homes. The fire broke out around 11 p.m. Wednesday in the 2100 block of Franklin Avenue in Morton. Heavy fire tore through the roof of Our Lady of Angels Regional Catholic School, where 400 students attended pre-kindergarten through 8th grade. One of them, Casey Foster. That's his school.
That's my alma mater, and I am devastated right now.
Crews jumped into action, tackling the flames, but also worked to stop the spread to neighboring homes. At least six homes, about 40 residents, including eight nuns, were evacuated by police.
So one of my best friends from grade school, H, is he lives right behind that school. So I texted him to make sure, because it was a big fire. And
yeah.
His house is right behind it. So I texted him to make sure that all those houses back there were okay. And so they were evacuated. But he's back in there, and so luckily none of those houses on Highland Avenue were affected. But
anything, so obviously it was an extensive fire. Anything left standing? Or
yes.
There's a lot of stone, right?
It was built 50 years ago, yeah. So it's a brick school. And I saw that the police or the fire chief from Holmes said that they were able to save the gym. And so the gym is a brand new extension. So the school was just a big, long rectangle, right?
Right.
And it was like two floors.
Old
school. And that was
literally.
It. And then after I had graduated, they had built an extension, put a cafeteria and a couple of more classrooms. I think that's where like the kindergarten and pre-K ended up being. And then they built a brand new gym there. I think the gym itself might be okay.
Officials say they were able to save the office and the gymnasium area.
Okay.
All right, there you go.
The fire quickly went to a second alarm and then a third alarm as more than 20 fire companies responded. The fire was brought under control just before 1 a.m. The school building was built in the 1950s. Our Lady of Angels is a newly formed Catholic school within the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, created by the merging of Our Lady of Fatima and Our Lady of Perpetual Help schools. And it's unclear what will happen come fall. What was it called when you went there, Casey?
We were OLPH. It was Our Lady of Perpetual Help. In fact, before Fatima came in, I believe St. Joe's of Collingdale, that had closed down. And so students from Collingdale ended up coming over to OLPH. And then, unfortunately, they closed down Fatima. Fatima sports still existed. So they still have like a football team, softball team, basketball team, and stuff like that. But the school itself closed down.
Well, you're representative of so many people in the area who are so closely associated with the schools going all the way throughout their, scholastic history. So when something like this happens around here, it really has an impact. So I'm sorry for you and other people who attended the school. Obviously, it seems they're going to rebuild and continue on. But, it's very sad.
The students now, they'll just have to, find another place to go to school.
Yeah, yeah.
St. Pius will welcome all those children with open arms. Oh, you know what? By the way, when I was in high school, our church burned down. We had two churches.
You are bad luck. I'm going to say it right now.
We had an old church and a new church. So they built a new church on the school campus. But the old church that was on Franklin Avenue burned down. And so, this is really bad luck.
It sucks. Yeah. It sucks.
By the way, somebody texts in and says, Bucksco has gone too far now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Those bastards.
All right, moving on. Jay-Z said Wednesday he's disappointed that Philadelphia is booting his annual music festival from the city's grandest boulevard, accusing the mayor of having, quote, zero appreciation for what Made in America has built alongside the phenomenal citizens of this city.
I detect a rap war.
Writing in the Philadelphia Inquirer, the music mogul rapped the city for making a decision before consulting organizers, calling it a failure on the part of Mayor Jim Kinney. He took out a two-page ad in the Inquirer. The mayor said that he thought the city's position had been communicated to Jay-Z. So there was a miscommunication.
Mayor!
Kenny said at a news conference, we love the concert and we want to keep it. He said the city's looking at alternative sites in hopes to resolve what he termed an unfortunate misunderstanding. Apparently, he said that we had some operational difficulties on the parkway because of how long it takes to set up and take down.
It is an extensive preparation and breakdown, that's for sure.
Oh, that area right there, like every week during the summer, it starts in the spring because there are walks and runs every weekend, and they break down and set up those tents every weekend. And there's
stuff is shut
events.
Down all the time, yeah.
Yes, and there are charities, but when they are shutting down Westover Drive, and Kelly Drive, and then you can't get around the Oval, and it's just a pain in the butt. That's my commute home every day.
And I think what's happening is he's been hearing from people who live in the area, and there's probably some fairly well-moneyed people in that area who are like, what the F?
Yeah, that Fairmount area, those couple of blocks are just shut down for weeks.
Made in America was originally intended to attract people to Philadelphia on Labor Day weekend, traditionally a slow time for tourism, said city spokeswoman Sarah Reyes. But the growth in tourism since then means that the need for an event of this scale at this location may no longer be necessary. The two-day festival has also drawn noise complaints from some neighbors, Philly.com reported. Nicki Minaj, Meek Mill, and Post Malone are set to perform at this year's festival. So we'll see if, indeed, they will move it to another location.
The one thing they can draw at this point is a rock act, apparently.
Yeah. Can we have a counter complaint? Hey, listen, your festival sucks now? I mean, like, it is geared towards one listening audience, and that's it?
And a lot of times, just a couple of artists from that listening audience.
Yeah, I mean, there aren't even any alt rock acts on that bill. It's like, come on, man.
It just used to be so expansive and cover so many genres, and it was so awesome, and now it's a little too pigeonholed.
Authorities are investigating whether a 13-year-old boy and a 12-year-old girl who both suffered large fish bites in the waters off Fire Island were victims of shark attacks. Shortly before noon yesterday, officials said the girl was bitten while wading in the water at a beach known as Sailor's Haven on Fire Island, a barrier beach off of the south shore of Long Island. The girl's mother says Lola is hanging in there a little overwhelmed right now. Soon after the attack, the boy was bitten while boogie boarding in the waters off another Fire Island beach known as Atlantique. The two beaches are several miles apart. Emergency medical workers removed a suspected shark tooth from the unidentified boy's leg, which suffered a puncture wound. The tooth is now being analyzed to determine the source of the attack. I mean, nobody was really hurt.
No, it seems to be a smaller shark, if anything, because we're looking at one of the bites, and it's not wonderful, but it's not horrific.
They caught a shark I saw in the news this morning. Looked to be pretty decent size, 6 or 8 feet long or something like that. And they were holding it with its mouth open, and they're not sure if that's the one or not, but they are looking into it. They're actually going to compare the tooth.
Sure.
And see if it matches. Beaches within the town of Islip and all Fire Island National Seashore's beaches are closed for at least the day in the wake of the attack. So they are looking into that. And then one last story, the 12 Thai boys and their soccer coach who were freed from a flooded cave after more than 2 weeks in an amazing rescue were released from the hospital yesterday. The members of the Wild Boars team were dressed in their soccer uniforms as they spoke to reporters in a press conference, recounting how they had been trapped in the cave that they were exploring by rising waters and had tried to dig their way out of the cave before being discovered by divers 9 days later. The boys thanked the Thai Navy SEALs and everyone who helped with their rescue and paid tribute to the former Thai Navy SEAL, Saman Kunan, who died during their rescue operation while placing oxygen canisters along the underwater escape route.
Did you hear what they're doing? They're going to Carlsbad Caverns.
Wow.
And it's like, come on.
Not a good choice.
Stay out of that stuff.
No more subterranean activities for you guys. All right, in sports this morning. Sacks are yummy. The Phils are still off today. They return to action tomorrow night as they open up their first series after the All-Star break with a homestand against the San Diego Padres. Jake Arrieta is going to get the start time. That is at, or is going to get the start and game time is 7:05. Last night, the L.A. Dodgers and Baltimore Orioles made it official as O's infielder Manny Machado has been traded to the Dodgers for a package of 5 players. In return for Machado, Baltimore gets outfielder Yunsnel Diaz.
Oh, your favorite, Preston.
And 4 more prospects. Machado is off to the best start of his career with career highs in the first half, including home runs and RBIs. In his first year as full-time shortstop, Machado was voted as the starter for the American League in this year's All-Star Game. In NBA news, the San Antonio Spurs have traded Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green to the Toronto Raptors for DeMar DeRozan and Jacob Poeltl for their protected 2019 first-round pick. Leonard has made it known that he wants to play in a big market, most likely Los Angeles. Therefore, it seems unlikely that he would sign an extension in Toronto and would elect to test free agency next summer as an unrestricted free agent. And word is the Eagles are still the Super Bowl champions.
Yeah.
And there you go. That's what I have for you in news this morning. It is 6:23, a Thursday. As I said, the weather is going to be phenomenal today.
I think we've had probably more than our fair share of sweltering belly flop challenges.
I remember every time sweating my ass off while we were out there this event. So it's going to be a nice change this year.
I'm looking for it because yesterday was sensational. Today's even better.
Yep. So we have a few guests that are going to be on the program. It's going to be a fun day today. Speaking of the belly flop championship, we're actually going to get a little television coverage. Fox 29 is going to be there, and Hank Flynn from Fox is going to participate in our belly flop championship.
I mean, he's insanely into this.
Yeah. So
we may have to calm him down.
He's going
to
stop in this morning. We'll find out what that level of excitement is. So we'll talk to him later today. Also scheduled to be on our program, Jeremy Piven.
Yeah.
Is stopping in. He's at Punchline tomorrow and Saturday, and he's in town to promote that. So Jeremy's going to be stopping by a little bit after 8 o'clock.
He's decided to enter the world of stand-up comedy. He's, you know, he's going around. He's paying his dues, and it's cool.
Yeah. And not only him, but our buddy Frank Caliendo is coming in. And he's going to be at Punchline tonight, by the way. So we got Punchline covered. There you go. So they're stopping in. We are good to go, and we still have a lot of things to give away, and we'll make sure we have your opportunity to win some goodies as the show progresses this morning. Let's take a break. Come back in a second. Stupid question. One I'm pretty proud of.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's right.
You had a home run yesterday.
Yeah. I've got a good one today, and I also have some entertainment stories I'm going to run by. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us.
This 93.3 WMMR audio on demand program returns after a brief word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Preston. Grilling season is here, and they have done it again at Omaha Steaks. This is the one and only deal that you can get. It is the Omaha Steaks Grill Ready Collection, a limited time for only $39.99. You heard that right. $39.99 is 80% off, and here's what you get. 2 tender filet mignons, 2 beefy top sirloins, 4 juicy boneless pork chops, 4 boneless chicken breasts, 4 all-beef Omaha Steak burgers, 4 traditional kielbasa sausages, 4 award-winning gourmet jumbo franks, an Omaha Steak seasoning packet, and for this deal, you get 4 made-from-scratch caramel apple tartlets for free. Did you hear all of that? You get, it's for $39.99. And what's wonderful about this is you're not going to have to stop off at the store on the way home. It's already going to be there ready to go. This limited time package for only $39.99 is available when you go to omahasteaks.com, type Gadzooks in the search bar, and add the Grill Ready Collection to your cart. Don't wait. You want to get this offer soon for summertime. Go to omahasteaks.com, type Gadzooks in the search bar, grab your friends, and fire up the grill.
Are you ready for love? If so, Stephen makes it easy, handpicking diamonds to create a stunning engagement ring that's guaranteed to take her breath away. Stephen Singer Jewelers, real love experts at the other corner of 8th and Walnut, or IHateStephenSinger.com.
Hey, it's Preston. Listen, when I want to relax, I go to Hand and Stone Massage Facial Spa. Listen, whether you want a rejuvenating massage or refreshing facial, Hand and Stone is the place to go. Introductory massages or facials start at just $59.95. Visit handandstone.com or one of their 50 locations in the Delaware Valley. Restrictions apply. See spa for details.
This is the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
All right, we're going to do a stupid question this morning. We are going to give away a pair of tickets for Summerfest Live, which is at Xfinity Live, and it is this Saturday. So here's the question that I'm very proud of. On an old calculator, an old digital calculator,
yes,
when you would turn the calculator upside down, what number spelled boobies?
That's a good one.
So remember, it's got to be turned upside down.
Yeah.
So give me the right side up order of the numbers.
Yeah.
215-263-WMMR.
So for Christmas one year, when they were just mind-boggling, what can you do with this thing?
Yeah.
You can add and subtract? So I snuck in and found it where my parents stored the Christmas presents. Because at that time, I guess I was too young to know about the boobies. I knew that you could spell shell.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which also you could shorten to hell.
Didn't even think about that.
So I used to spell
but
hell.
I did it. I turned it around, and in the dark of the room, the glow of those red digits, it's true.
Yeah. We also would spell boobless.
Oh, all right. Boobless. All right. Mm-hmm. Let's see if you know what that answer is. An old calculator, when turned upside down, what number spelled boobies? 215-263-WMMR is a number. We were just I'm going to give you some birthdays today, by the way. It is the 19th of July. We were just talking about Queen.
Yes.
I'm really waiting for you to pick a Queen song.
Yeah,
here,
I just don't. I'm like, which one do I go with here?
Keep Yourself Alive.
Okay, that's a good one. That's
yeah,
it. All right,
up a little
go.
Bit
yep,
right there
it
because
is.
It
Booyah!
Is Brian May's birthday today. Guitarist extraordinaire from Queen turned 71 years old, and he was just a lovely English gentleman. When we had him here in our studio.
Super smart guy. Yeah. He had brought in a book of stereoscopic images, the old style, you know, where you'd hold the glass with the two lenses and look at the picture.
Yeah.
But he is super smart. I know he's responsible for designing a lot of the electronics in his guitars, too. But he's cool. He's just a great guy.
And we played this song right before he came on for the interview. And when we were in the break, and he's like, oh, and he goes, you know, this song, they told us we couldn't do the guitar part that way. We couldn't get it to sound. And he said, yes, we can.
Yeah.
I said, we can do it, and I'll show you how to do it. And he went in and showed the engineers exactly the sound he wanted, and he came up with it.
I'm glad because the earlier you talk about the whole thing about knowing that each member of the band has written a number one hit, the initial versions of the scripts that were being given to them really, and listen, you can't argue that Freddie Mercury is one of the greatest frontmen of all time.
All time.
But this is a band that has a larger story to tell, and people like Brian May are why there's a story to tell.
Exactly. He's one of my all-time favorite guitarists. So Brian May, 71 years old today. Happy birthday to you, sir. It's also another English gentleman's birthday. Benedict Cumberbatch.
Is
42 years old.
Extraordinarily talented fan.
I really have become a Doctor Strange fan, and that's all because of Infinity War. I did enjoy the original movie. I never really followed the comics. I was aware of them, as were you, Preston.
Yep.
But his stuff with the Sherlock Holmes stuff and the other movies, he's proven himself to be funny. You know where he actually is pretty good, as far as comedically? In the second Zoolander movie, he plays this androgynous model.
Oh, I could totally. I haven't seen that movie, but yes, he has that look about him.
He's very funny. Wow.
You know what? I actually, oddly enough, I love in Doctor Strange is the very first sequence when we're meeting him, and he's
the douche.
No, he's performing surgery, and he's having people test him on his history of music knowledge.
Right, yeah.
And he's going on and on about Feel So Good from Chuck Mangione, which is, I don't know why, I find it very entertaining, but he's great, man. He's been in and continues to just expand his hugeness in the screen. I mean, the Imitation Game, he was
great.
Alan Turing in that. But he's just a great actor, and he's celebrating his 42nd birthday today. Anthony Edwards,
ooh.
Revenge of the Nerds. he played Lewis, right?
No. Yeah, no, he was Gilbert.
He was Gilbert.
Yes.
Lewis Skolnick and Gilbert, and of course, Goose.
Do you think he will appear as a guiding ghost in Top Gun 2?
Maybe. He did in Revenge of the Nerds, right? Nerds in Paradise. Lewis dreamt about him.
Yes.
At some point.
That's right.
Yeah.
A la, you know, Obi-Wan.
Yeah. Maybe he
or
comes
Yoda.
Back.
Uh-huh.
As a goosed.
Goose. Yeah.
Not bad. But then he was in ER, had a nice run there, and then you really don't see him anymore. But he's 56 years old today, Mr. Anthony Edwards. It's also Campbell Scott's birthday, and he was in Singles, Dying Young, and The Amazing Spider-Man. I was trying to remember who he is in The Amazing Spider-Man.
He is Peter Parker's uncle.
Is he?
Yeah. He's his uncle.
I don't think you saw that one. The Amazing Spider-Man was the one with Andrew Garfield.
Oh.
No, I did see that.
It was his dad. It was his actual dad, because they do...
Oh, they that's right. They reconnected the story. Well, yeah. Okay. So where's...
You know, that was a scientist.
Right.
Sort of stuff.
Okay. And he gets...
Right.
Well, follow that. They started and then they stopped that series.
I did see The Amazing Spider-Man. I've chosen to forget about The Amazing Spider-Man. But he's the son of late actor George C. Scott, by the way. He's 57 today.
And he's in Singles, which Jeremy Piven is in as well.
That is correct.
Oh, yeah.
Jeremy Piven.
They have a great scene together, actually.
Scheduled to be here this morning. We also have the last birthday director, Hideo Nakata, who brought us the original Japanese Ring and the U.S. Ring 2.
Yes.
And he is...
now works for the Balfour Company, Preston, doing high school rings.
I do all that.
He just fell in love with the whole ring industry so much.
Now, did he direct Ringu?
Yes, he did.
Okay, so it's not... He didn't do The Ring? Or did he do the American version?
The American version was not him. Okay. No, but he did the original Ringu, if you watch it, not to geek out too much horror-wise, expands upon how this that girl became able to transcend life and how she got the power she got.
Okay, that's cool. He's 57 today. All right, let's see if we can get an answer to this question. On an old calculator, when turned upside down, what number spells boobies?
Boobies.
215-263-WMMR, and I will go to... Let's go to Amanda. Hi, Amanda. How you doing?
Good.
All right, Amanda, on an old calculator, when turned upside down, what number spells boobies?
531-8008.
She's correct.
She knows her boobies.
Yeah. Hang on just a second, Amanda. We'll get your information, and we are going to give you a pair of tickets for Summerfest Live at Xfinity Live, and that's Saturday. Visit XfinityLive.com to learn more. All right, let's talk about Harvey Weinstein.
What a lovable slob.
He's attempting to have Ashley Judd's lawsuit against him dismissed.
Well, you know his defense team is swinging at anything at this point.
Well, he's got 80 women who have accused him of sexual
misconduct. Where's your proof?
Yeah, he denies the allegations of non-consensual sex. Judd is one of many women who have filed suit against him. In April, she sued Weinstein for allegedly sexually harassing her and then systematically destroying her career when she spurned him. Her suit formally charges him with defamation, sexual harassment, interference with protective economic interference, and unfair competition. His lawyer, Phyllis Kupferstein, argues that Judd waited too long to file the suit and that the allegations fall far short of meeting the pervasive and severe required element. Judd will be permitted to reply to the arguments, and if the case moves forward, observers say that Weinstein and other directors may be forced to testify in the case.
Not to go off the track here too much, but what's happening in the world of the other Judds with Winona and Naomi? Are they do anything?
Don't know. I mean, they were country singers. But I'm not sure where their careers lie at this point in time. So anyhow, that continues. They want that thrown out. Meghan Markle, she can't catch a break with her family. Her half-sister, Samantha Grant, who has gone on the record several times slamming Meghan.
She must be like, son of a bitch.
Including famously warning Prince Harry not to marry her before their May 19th nuptials, is now claiming that her coldness to her father is killing him.
It's killing him.
But you know what, Steve? Who cares? She's married, dude. She's royalty.
It's done.
It's done.
It's done.
Who cares?
Do you think we've made a terrible mistake in allowing this harlot to enter the family?
No, that's not going to happen.
The news comes on the heels of reports that the royal family is horrified by Thomas Markle's penchant for blabby interviews with members of the tabloid press. Now, this is what her half-sister Samantha says. My father is not an embarrassment for loving his daughter. She said, the royals are an embarrassment for being so cold. You should be ashamed of yourselves. And then she had tagged the Kensington.
They're known for bad teeth.
They are.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I think what they're really upset about, or what the royal family is that Thomas Markle is joining the cast of Big Brother 15. So that could be a problem.
Dude, I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah.
Don't actually, why not go after?
Yeah.
And Big Brother is huge in the UK.
That's the country of origin, right? Isn't that where they first started doing Big Brother?
It may well be. So she actually saved her harshest criticism for Meghan herself, saying, how about you pay tribute to your own father? Enough is enough. Act like a humanitarian. Act like a woman. If our father dies, I'm holding you responsible, Meg.
Okay, well, at least she's metering her rhetoric. I'll tell you this, and over my life I've learned this. When someone is incredibly attractive, they're always correct. Right?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
There you go. Meanwhile, a new report in the Daily Mail is claiming that Thomas faked his alleged heart attack before the wedding to get out of showing up and in a bid for sympathy as well.
He clutched the wrong arm.
A source close to the Duchess allegedly told the Mail he had to come up with a good enough reason not to attend her wedding and avoid any further embarrassment after those stage photos went public.
And my butt hurts wouldn't have worked.
He brought this upon himself, and if he were truly sick, Meghan would have made an effort to visit him. Don't feel sorry for him. If anything, feel sorry for Meghan. The Mail continues saying, claiming they reached out to Sharp Chula Medical Center, which he said he stayed at, and that the clinic denied treating him.
Well, you know the British tabloids will just keep pecking and and pecking at this.
Yep.
And even if there isn't really a story, they'll create one.
Yep. Hey, Paris Hilton has revived an old feud with frenemy Lindsay Lohan on Instagram.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Their spat has spanned more than a decade and has spawned countless slapbacks, snarky subtweets, and think pieces.
Snarky subtweets?
Yeah, but in case you don't remember, the pair hung out in the early 2000s and were recorded saying not nice things about each other. Phrases like fire crotch and the C word were thrown around with abandon. Flash forward to a Paris fan account sharing a montage of Lohan paparazzi shots and videos, including one from November 2006 when she said that Hilton hit her in the arm with a drink the night before.
Then ow!
Then another where she backtracked, and yet another showing Lindsay referring to Hilton as the C word, yet again backtracking and denying she ever said it.
She didn't actually say it, Preston. She had a calculator and used a series of numbers that held upside down, spelled the C word.
That's the same
thing.
And then
showed it to her.
It seems the montage came to engage Eris's attention as Hilton left a comment with hashtag pathological liar.
Uh-huh.
Your move, Lohan.
Well, I'll tell you this. They were all coming up through the ranks with Kim Kardashian. And it was not soon after all that crap when the Kardashian sex tape came out.
Yep.
And look where she is right now.
Yep. We were watching The Parent Trap over the weekend. And Lindsay had such potential. She was a really good child actress.
Do you know what I blame it on, honestly? Cigarettes.
She became
a chain smoker and it all went south.
It didn't help.
It did not help.
That's for sure, man.
Well, you know, this is a warning to anybody approaching the ages of 18 to 22. Those ages can do a number on you for the rest of your life.
Yes.
They really can.
Did we learn nothing from our calculators?
Right.
Yep. David Spade is still shocked and devastated by the suicide of his sister-in-law, Kate Spade. He was on Good Morning America with Robin Roberts and said, "We're doing as good as we can. It's been very tough, obviously. It is very sweet that everyone came out of the woodwork, that she made an impact." He had said, "It's funny because every girl I was with or anyone that knew that they would see Katie would dress differently." He said they would bring their A game. It was very sweet. They'd be like, "Is Katie coming? Is Katie going to be there?" And if she was, it was a whole new wardrobe.
Do you know, in the early days of the Kate Spade, huge company that it ended up being, David Spade floated her and his brother, who she's married to, was married to, alone.
Oh,
so
really?
Yeah. He could have been an investor, but he floated in alone, and that was it.
When did Kate Spade really, really take off? Because I remember it being a name, and you could get like $40 Kate Spade bag.
10, 15 years ago, Marissa?
Yeah, it was probably like the early 2000s. It became one of the first like affordable, super nice, classy, fancy lines. Like, you weren't buying a Louis Vuitton.
Right.
You were buying a Kate Spade, and it was just as nice, good quality, and it wasn't Coach. It was like it was just something different and young
wasn't
and funky.
Wasn't it her husband who convinced her to get into the handbag biz?
Yeah.
I think that's as the legend goes.
Yeah, because then her husband actually, when they divorced, he started another line called... began with the C, and then it actually closed like 2 or 3 years ago. But it was a really cool line.
All right.
By the way, going back to women changing their wardrobe when she would be around, he had said that Katie was very sweet. She knew that they were doing that, and she would compliment them. And when I'd say, "You don't dress up for me," they'd go, "Yeah, well, that's her, and you're you." He said she was such a beautiful, lovely, great spirit that obviously will be missed. And he said, "I'm going to start bawling."
We have the opposite situation. When people know they're going to come on the show knowing how we dress, they dress down.
Yeah.
Because they know what slobs we are.
Kate was 55 when she died.
I confused that. That was Tori Burch's ex-husband that had Sea Wonder. But okay. I confuse those, Tori Burch and Kate Spade.
She left behind her estranged husband, Andy, and their 13-year-old daughter, Frances, and legions of fans. David had contributed $100,000 to the National Alliance on Mental Health Illness in her honor.
It's they one thing's for very clear. They got along really well, and he adored her.
Speaking of being gone too soon, 5 years after dying from a heroin overdose, Corey Monteith's mother is saying that dental work may have caused him to fall off the wagon. She said that Corey had a massive amount of dental work. And McGregor told People in the new interview he had little teeth and they were all capped. He had had a lot of medication in his system, which was not good for his body coming out of rehab. The Glee star was found dead in a hotel room in Vancouver in 2013. Traces of morphine and codeine were found in his system, along with heroin and alcohol. McGregor said Corey didn't want to die. But that may, that medication, she says, may have been what triggered him to head down that path.
It's
got
to be a tough thing, man. If you are, an addict and you've come off your addiction or you're in rehab and then you have to get some sort of painful surgery that requires, that most people would get prescribed pain medication for.
But yeah, I mean, there are steps that you can take, and it's not like it's not a guarantee.
Yep.
You know, like I knew somebody who is in recovery, was sober for a long time, had to get an ACL surgery. And that guy got no pain medication aside from whatever they had to put him under with.
Yeah, yeah.
He did it, his recovery all with Tylenol and ibuprofen. And that was his choice. You don't have to do that. If you remember, like, Steven Tyler a few years ago, he was going through something. He was trying to do, like, pain management. There are steps that you can take and probably should take if you are in, you know, recovery, but it's not a guarantee.
Hmm.
And just because you are an addict doesn't mean that you have to suffer as well, right?
Right.
So that's tough.
Leslie Jones is hopping mad about her late order from Jessica Alba's Honest Company. The Saturday Night Live star first tweeted out her frustration at Alba and her Honest Company Tuesday. And while Alba apologized via Twitter, Jones has yet to acknowledge her comment.
She does not seem to be a happy customer at this point.
Alba had written, OMG, I am so sorry that you haven't had a great experience. We are all over this issue and we'll make it right. I am so appreciative and grateful to you for being a loyal, honest fan over the years, especially as we go through these growing pains. She said, I'm a huge fan of yours. And Alba had launched the company in 2012. In June, it announced a $200 million round of funding from a private equity firm.
That's just crazy. But what Leslie Jones was freaking out about is these delays in shipping the products to her when she had paid for two-day delivery or overnight delivery.
Yeah.
And they were sort of fudging how long it would take. So they would say, okay, you'll get it in 2 to 3 days. But they would fudge on when it would be sent out. So, okay, you'll get it in 2 to 3 days after it's sent out in 2 weeks.
Oh, wait a minute.
No, you can't do that.
Yep, agreed. Alice Wetterlund, who played engineer Carla Walton on season 2 and 3 of HBO Silicon Valley, and she was apparently not a happy camper there, responding to online rumblings about how accused sexual assaulter and former co-star TJ Miller still gets booked on comedy shows like Hot Tub. She tweeted that working alongside him was, quote, a nightmare, and adding that everyone who had power on that, almost all male set, including the male cast members, enabled him and were complicit in his unprofessionalism.
Huh.
So she's not really saying anything about, you know, assault or harassment, just that he was very
unprofessional
and not easy to work with, which, listen, he's a nice guy to us, but I could see him being a little unhinged and a little... You know, a bit
of a
wild card. And
yeah.
And when you want to just get your work done.
Come on, man.
It's work. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she's coming out and saying that. How about this? I'm sure you guys saw this online. A 25-foot recreation of an open-shirted Jeff Goldblum.
It's great.
Has been erected to honor the original Jurassic Park film in London.
It's the most bizarre thing you'll ever see. But it's hilarious.
He's become that thing.
He is.
You know what I mean?
He's the new Hasselhoff.
Yeah.
But a much more talented Hasselhoff. And I don't mean to diminish David Hasselhoff. But, yeah, he has become that pop culture quirky thing.
Yeah. Now TV erected the statue in Potter's Fields in front of London's Tower Bridge.
It's him in Jurassic Park when he's there kind of lounging back with his shirt open after he's been injured.
And
oh, is that what that's from?
That's what that's from.
I know they were saying Jurassic Park, but I don't remember that scene.
So in the original Jurassic Park, like when he's in the back of the Jeep and everything, and they get him back to the to get tended to, he's got his shirt open and he's leaning back and he's talking with him, and that's sort of what that's supposed to be.
He's like, must go faster.
Yeah, yeah.
It's to commemorate
a large reptile.
It's to commemorate the 25th anniversary of Jurassic Park's release. And they're calling it Jurassic Jeff, and it's already become a tourist attraction. So it's excellent.
Leave it up.
How long is it going to be there?
We can visit it.
Yeah.
You know what? It's a temporary it's a temporary case. I don't know when they plan on moving it along. So yeah, they've got it right there in front of London Tower, London's Tower Bridge. 10 years ago, yesterday, Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight was released.
And
Warner Brothers is celebrating with a one-week limited release of the movie in IMAX 70mm starting August 24th.
We all saw it together, didn't we? We were at the same screening.
I don't remember.
It seems that way, because I remember we all walked out sort of blown away.
The Dark Knight will play in 4 IMAX locations, not in our area, unfortunately.
We saw The Dark Knight Rises, right?
Yeah, because I saw The Dark Knight with my brother at the Franklin Institute. We had a screening there.
And there was someone passing them songs off at you.
Okay.
Hang on a second. Which one has the Joker in it?
Dark Knight.
Okay, yeah, we all saw it together then at the Franklin Institute.
Okay, well, maybe I didn't make it to that screening. Whatever. It doesn't matter, because what I remember about that is the opening scene IMAX when they just it's just a building. You know, you're just zooming in on windows. But, man, from moment one, I was sucked into that movie.
That is a movie that could exist. And I said, when you see it, you could extract Batman. It could just be a Martin Scorsese, crime drama. Yeah. And it would work. It's that tense, that well acted. But then all the other stuff is just sensational.
AMC CityWalk, Universal City, California. AMC Lincoln Square, New York. AMC Metreon in San Francisco. And the Ontario Place Cinesphere in Toronto will be showing it.
Gotta say, President, I'm intrigued by this Batman character. I'm going to check into this.
The movie raked in $1 billion worldwide and has become a fan favorite, albeit with a dark underbelly, especially as star Heath Ledger had unexpectedly died 7 months before its release.
You want to know why we're not having a screening in Philadelphia? Because probably the biggest fans live there. And we don't want to appease them. Drives me crazy.
What?
Do it at IMAX, for Christ's sake. Cool. I would actually go to see that on IMAX.
Yeah. Well, somebody might need to get Natalie Dormer in the Witness Protection Program. The Game of Thrones star confessed that she knows how the HBO mega hit ends. Of course, this is, she's no longer in it, but for some reason she knows how this ends.
Although, so I've started back watching slowly but surely. When does she depart the series? How many years into it?
I have lost track of when happened. Where are you? What's happening in
6 episodes in
Westeros? Really?
Yeah. So the thing that I want to do though is I want to start shotgunning it because it's going to start up next year, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you got time.
All right.
She makes it through season 6, Steve.
All right.
So she isn't quite sure how, though, the ending gets to its point. She tells the Hollywood Reporter, I know A to B. I know what B is, but I don't know how they get B, but I do know B. Dormer also discussed.
What the hell is she talking about?
She means the ending.
Okay.
She knows how it ends, but she doesn't know exactly how they get to that point, what takes place to get to the conclusion. She also discussed her new film, In the Darkness, which she co-wrote, produced, and stars in. Said, I wanted to explore the idea about a human being defined by their pain, and that their entire identity has been amassed around a particular want or need and anger, and then what that does to an individual. She said the script is kind of about revenge, forgiveness, redemption, facing your inner self, and ultimately letting go.
So it's Baby's Day Out.
Yeah. She can also be seen in Picnic and Hanging Rock, which is streaming on Amazon right now.
Of all the gorgeous women that have been on this program on Game of Thrones, she's my favorite.
She
just ranks up for whatever reason.
She's
for me.
Sexy.
She's the most sultry.
Yeah.
In fact, I would love to see a movie based on her character in the original Captain America called Slutty Office Worker.
Slutty Office Worker. her, and you know who I really have the hots for from Game of Thrones? Is Melisandre.
Oh,
the,
yeah.
The redhead priestess witch or whatever. Something's really hot about
there's
her.
There's two somethings that are really quirky.
Yeah, those are good two somethings, man.
They point up.
But Natalie is just gorgeous.
She's a sexy woman.
Beautiful look about her. All right, so what else do I have here for you?
And you cover the world with entertainment. I don't even know how you sift through all the stuff you glean.
Here you go. Here's a director passed away, Steve. You will know who he is. Stan Dragati.
Oh, yeah.
Director of Love at First Bite and Mr. Mom.
He was, I think he was married to Cheryl Teagues.
He was.
Yeah.
At one point. But his current wife, Yolanda.
Yolanda, I thought you were going to be cool.
Says that he died from complications of pneumonia. He also directed She's Out of Control and Necessary Roughness. She's Out of Control. That was... from Taxi.
Tony Danza.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know who was the girl? It was Mickey Dolan's daughter.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So he had...
Did he direct Zorro the Gay Blade?
Now, that I don't know. But he did Necessary Roughness. Necessary Roughness was
a fun movie. Great.
That was a fun movie. Yeah.
Welcome to Foot.
Balls.
Great is a bit of a stretch, Marissa.
Listen,
I wouldn't call it a great movie.
An 8-year-old.
Empire Records is her favorite movie. So, yeah.
So here's
the context.
When I was in high school, my friends and I, we were like, okay, do we either go to this party in the woods or do we go see Necessary Roughness? We went and saw Necessary Roughness. Party in the Woods got busted. Like 40 people got arrested. Yes.
Oh, good call. It saved your ass.
It saved my ass.
Oh, that's sad, yeah. Stan.
Thank you, Necessary Roughness.
Thank you, Stan Dragati. He was previously married to Cheryl
Teagues. It was my pleasure.
But he married Yolanda.
Hey, now, Yolanda! We're not going to do anything stupid, are we?
He married Yolanda in 2014. But they've been together for more than 30 years, and he has no children.
So he had kind of it was like pulpy movies that were fun, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Competent.
All right, how about clips?
Okay.
We cool with that? Oh, you know
what
else
cool
he did?
Yeah, we cool with that, Yolanda?
Nick had just pulled up his IMDb. He also did The Man with One Red Shoe, which I thought was kind of a fun little movie.
Yeah.
Now, Tom Hanks met Rita Wilson. It was not that. It was, what was the other movie?
Well, Volunteers.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. All right. All right, let's get to these clips here. Unfriended 2 Dark Web is a sequel to the 2014 cyber horror film.
Which I kind of liked.
In this clip, we learn that director Steven Susko has taken over the series with enthusiasm.
Yeah!
It was fantastic. I mean, it was one of the most exciting things for me to come on board was to try to make a film that sort of ignored everything that I had learned in all my years of writing and saying this is an entirely different narrative form. You have to learn everything from scratch.
Shut the fuck up!
By the way, he wrote The Grudge.
Did he?
Yeah. Yeah, he and a few other in the horror genre.
He wrote the American version.
Of The Grudge?
Yeah.
I don't know. It just says The Grudge, writer, 2004.
Huh.
So Unfriended 2, Dark Web is in theaters tomorrow. Let's do the next clip. Trial and Error, a satire on true crime shows, enters its second season. Here, Sherry Shepherd compares this to her other TV roles.
You know, I love the character of Anne Flesh because if anybody knows me from 30 Rock or How I Met Your Mother, any of the other shows, I play more of a sassy. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, I'm sassy. When they want sassy, they call me. And so this is a character where it's just like, she's just joyful.
Shut the f-
Trial and Error, season 2, premieres tonight, by the way.
Is there any more definitive shut the F up than Mark Summers?
No, that one's the best. I agree. And that is what I have for you this morning in entertainment news. We got stuff to give away today, which is always a good problem to have. And I have a chance for you to win a case of Yards Philly Pale Ale. And let's take call number 13 at 215-263-WMMR. And they have 16-ounce cans, by the way. Local favorites, Philly Pale Ale, Brawler, and IPA are now available in the can. So go to yardsbrewing.com to schedule a brewery tour at their new location on 5th and Spring Garden. And you can pick up a case of cans at Tim's Liquors on Limestone Road in Hockessin, Delaware. So let's get you on board. Call 13 215-263-WMMR. Jeremy Piven is scheduled to be here a little after 8 o'clock. And we also have our buddy Frank Caliendo stopping in.
Yeah.
The Belly Flop Championship is tonight. The weather is perfect for this event.
You got to come down.
85 degrees, sunshine, humidity gone, a light breeze. You're going to love it tonight. Valley Beach poolside. And we're going to have Reporter Hank Flynn of Fox 29 participating in that. They're going to bring their cameras, so it might end up on TV, but he's going to be stopping in this morning to talk a little belly flop action. We'll be back in a second. Stay with us.
The MMR mobile app. Use it to grab the MMR live stream and MMR audio on demand, including the Preston and Steve podcast. Bring up the live studio webcam, too. The MMR app is Android Auto and Apple CarPlay compatible, and it's free.
The ESPYs are stupid, Nick Foles won last night.
That wasn't so stupid. That was cool.
That's nice. Yeah. That's nice. We, we don't... Steve and I are crazy hardcore into sports, and I think that, you know, well, look, I enjoy watching a game or getting into certain aspects of sports. The idea of the whole awards after you've already won in your field is kind of dumb.
Yeah, like who won the best championship?
Yeah, exactly. You're winning for winning. And therein lies, I think, an inherent redundancy. Yes.
I love sports, and I can't stand the ESPYs. I find them so self-aggrandizing and so self-congratulatory, and it just is like, all right, we get it. You know, and it's just... there's nothing going on in the sports world on the days around the All-Star break for baseball.
So that's why they do it.
That's why they do it last night.
Yeah, we got to squeeze.
Let's jam another award show. Shoehorn something
in here because there's no sports one day out of the year, but we got to do something. So anyway, they did it, and Nick Foles did win. He won Best Championship Performance. And we have his acceptance speech. So.
He did Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls.
Did he?
Which was amazing. Waterfalls from TLC.
Wow.
It was a great performance, and he deserved it.
I think this is a portion of it. Here we go.
It's been a crazy career. If any of y'all know my career path, it doesn't make sense. But, you know, I'm here right now. You know, my teammates, coaches, you know what? We faced so much adversity this year. We have an amazing team. It's so much fun to go to work in that locker room every single day. I couldn't have done it without y'all. I mean, we see what happened. We won the first Super Bowl in Philadelphia history, so we got a special group of guys.
So it was a big night for him. You know,
it's cool. Funny because, you know, you think about it and think about all that we went through over the past couple of weeks collectively as sports fans are wont to do. But all of the stuff and is this going to happen? The hand-wringing and all that. And it is cool to see him and to see other team members sitting in the audience nodding, because that's a moment in time you share with a brotherhood.
Sure.
You know, I think of us in, you know, the show, the collective, all of us here, we had that same sort of thing, belonging to a team that gets it done.
Yeah.
It's a cool feeling. You know, they share a unique thing.
A bond.
Yeah.
I didn't see it. Marissa, you watched it. How did Danica Patrick look? She was hosting it, right?
She looked good. That's, you know who looked really good?
Pretty much all I'm concerned about.
Yeah. Kate Beckinsale.
Kate Beckinsale.
Of course she would look great.
Why was she there?
Yeah. Is she a wife of someone?
She presented, I don't know if she's promoting something maybe, but she presented Best... championship, I think, which went to like
best
the
championship. best championship. That's a category.
Steve and I got up close and personal to Kate Beckinsale when we were in Hawaii. Whoa. She was promoting the movie Pearl Harbor, and she was at that time. Steve, I remember us going, "This is the most beautiful human being that I've ever been in close proximity
to." You and I were like, you know, like in Zoolander. We could not understand what kind of, what is this thing? What is?
We're just hitting things.
I mean, it's like no human looks like that. And then you have the other end of the scale, two sloths us.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
She comes walking closer. We just start bouncing up and down.
It's okay. Here's a gummy bear.
Then you calm down a little bit. That was an interesting looking dress she was wearing.
Yeah, I'm trying to get them to pull up video of her walking when she came out.
She walks now.
Well, it was something like J-Lo or Britney Spears would wear, where it was only like a bodysuit with like a cape that was see-through.
Well, it was lace.
So, mind you, that's a highlight of the sports award show.
Okay.
Yeah, her and Jennifer Gardner came out too, and they both
I like Jennifer Gardner too. All right, so anyhow, the ESPYs were last night. We had a local winner. That's really, really cool.
Yes.
I'm happy to see that. Okay, what do we talk about now? You know what? I want to let Marissa vent for a moment because she posted something on Instagram yesterday. I got a lot of response. I thought it was kind of interesting. And there is a movement right now to phase out some plastics that we use in the world to maybe cut back on things that don't biodegrade, and they're clogging up, you know, they're getting out in the water and the oceans, or they're filling up landfills and so on and so forth. I know they're actually in the UK, there's a big movement to get rid of the plastic tampon applicator.
Oh. Yes. And going to use... back to wood.
No.
Ow.
Like George Washington's teeth. Martha Washington used wooden tampons. And they were not effective.
Well, they were balls, though. They were very
absorbent. They were balls. A little absorbent. They left rings.
But the applicator, I saw Alice Eve, because I follow her on Instagram, had posted a video of trying to end that. So they would go with like a cardboard or paper or something.
My thing with these floating garbage farms that are in the oceans is that... And many times they kill sharks, Case.
Oh.
So
there's some good we might be overlooking.
Okay. That's what they're trying to eliminate, stuff like that. And I can get it. Your thing sort of actually, believe it or not, Marissa, hit home to me because I think I have a level of passion about what you're talking about.
All right. Since I was a little kid, like I'm thinking like second grade, because I was in school in the 90s and there was a big push to like not have the refrigerator open for too long, to turn off lights, to make sure that you turn off water,
yeah,
conserve water
run, yeah.
Yep, while you're brushing your teeth. I followed all those. It's stuck through my life. I walk whenever I can. I take public transportation.
You're like a contestant on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Exactly.
Now.
Exactly. Like, I will do anything to like save the earth. It's just second nature to me. I don't even think twice. I recycle. I reuse. But when I drink a vodka water, I want to be able to mash the crap out of the lemon and lime that come in my drink. And with these gosh darn paper straws, they get destroyed. And then I have this mushy straw in my drink. And it pisses me off.
So the gist of it is you do not like the paper straws because you do not believe they are resilient enough.
No, they suck.
Okay.
Whoever's making them, they have no integrity and they fall apart. And I just want a plastic straw. I'm sorry. I love the turtles.
Why don't
I
just
love...
use a
Well, hang on. Yeah, yeah. Steve, I would. This is the only time I've ever asked to do this. Can I come over there and borrow your reverb for a moment?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's a pleasure. Hold on, turn it off just a second. Ladies and gentlemen, to me, this sounds like a first world problem.
But we took a long journey to get to the point that Marissa doesn't like paper straws.
I just had a realization, Preston, this is probably something that like I deal with 3 or 4 times a week. Is that more of a first world problem?
Yeah.
That I probably have a vodka water 3 or 4 times a week.
Well, your alcohol addiction might be the bigger issue here.
No, the raging alcoholism is a secondary issue. The waking up in alleyways and
Errant
knife fights.
We went out for brunch not that long ago, my family and I, and this was the first time that they had the paper straws given to us at the place we were eating, and I think it's cool. I mean, because I don't. I drink my drink fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm. You slam it.
I don't let it sit there for a long time. This was a non-alcoholic drink. It was like an iced tea or something I was having. So I was like, oh, here you go. They have paper straws. I knew these were coming. I've heard that that's kind of been the one of the next phases in conservation.
Straw technology.
Yeah, straw technology. And so I didn't have a problem with it getting mushy or anything like that. But if you let it sit there for a while, I could certainly see that eventually it's going to, you know, it's going to dissolve a little.
This goes to a topic.
It's going to get mushy.
A topic we had a little while ago, mm-hmm. a couple days ago, about the pruning fingers and the way things feel in texture. For me, when I'm drinking a drink and the paper
just doesn't feel
teeth,
right in your mouth.
Doesn't feel right. It gives me like a tingle,
yeah.
And not a positive tingle. It's like when, and as I said before, when you're eating a popsicle and your teeth rake against the wooden popsicle stick,
right.
It's that same feeling. I'm not opposed to it. A straw is a straw,
yeah.
But work on the texture of the straw a little bit more, and I'll be down with it. But right now, I will actively go old school. I mean, I go to this, you know, my juice place, Preston. I have my juice place. I will go in, and there are two bowls. One has the new paper, and then one has the old plastic straws. I'll grab the plastic because it just, it F's me up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I
You're adorable, by the way. You're like a you're like an Ewok who found out he's not getting his pension check.
You guys keep saying paper straw, but it's like it is cardboardy, right?
It's cardboardy, and that's what I don't like about it.
Yeah, it's like layered like thin cardboard. And it's been like this fad, these paper straws, like since like the Pinterest revolution, that like everybody has them and they're cute and they're decorative and they're pretty, and I've hated them since then, and they haven't gotten any better. And now they come in like the paper, like you get a straw and it comes in the paper, and you like do the like.
Do they have permanent straws?
Hold on a minute.
Okay.
Wait, the what?
Like the paper where you like you hit it down. I don't know how to describe it, and it like pops out.
Right.
Like now they're putting paper straws in paper.
Okay.
So they're making more refuse by putting the paper straws in paper to cover them.
No, they're not, because they were putting paper on plastic straws, too.
Give me my goddamn plastic straws!
They were already doing that. I know you're passionate about this. And Casey, I'm sorry, what were you saying?
No, it's just, do they have, like, permanent straws? Can you just go out and get a permanent straw?
Yes, actually, yes.
They're made of stone.
I was given a stainless steel one. So I have that sitting at home, and I haven't used it yet, because I don't want to use stainless steel, and like...
Why not?
I don't know. Again, the teeth thing. Like, to be drinking out of...
Use forks that are made of metal and spoons, right?
Yeah, I know, but I just don't want to.
Will you stop introducing valid arguments?
Yeah. Then,
would you stop making legitimate points?
I'm so sorry.
You're screwing up her tirade. I understand what she's talking about. I do feel it on that one level, though. It's not so I can, and you have an issue too, because it's significantly impacting your raging alcoholism, and that's the issue. But I got it. I think, and I've heard other people complain as well about that. So you know, but you talked about caring. Is there a collapsible straw you can keep in your wallet?
Collapsible. A telescoping straw.
A telescoping straw for just such a situation?
There is another option. There's a silicone.
Drink it with your mouth.
Yeah.
There's a silicone straw that they've put out that's just like the stainless steel, and you have to clean them, and they come in like packs of 5 or 10.
Is silicone biodegradable?
No, but it's permanent.
Reusable.
It's more permanent. Yeah. What about bamboo? Bamboo is
You have to wrestle it away from a panda bear.
But it's a green thing, because bamboo is a weed, right? So like if you're gonna do like
Would you like to drink it through a weed, sir?
That's interesting. I wonder if it has to be flavorless. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So you're not contaminating the taste of your beverage.
That's how Yosemite Sam was drinking his coconut juice, Preston. Yeah. Trapped on that island, you'll remember.
Yeah, but I'm like you.
Piece of bamboo through your coconut.
I'm like you, Preston. I definitely conserve my drinks when I'm out to eat. I you know, like I will drink one Diet Coke, you know, throughout the course of my meal. It's very rare do I actually, hey, yeah, I'll take a refill or whatever. But so I'm sure by the end of my meal, if I had a paper straw, it would be mush at the bottom of it.
And it's also a utensil, because I use it for mashing my fruit.
Well, just get it.
This is clearly a first world issue.
Yeah.
There are people, you know, click, click, whatever the sound is in Africa, has to walk 15 miles, you know, to moisten a towel. And Marissa's upset because her 16-ounce vodka and water doesn't quite taste right as the straw collapses. And on the way, by the way, they're being stalked by all sorts of predatory wildlife.
We need to do another first world problem segment for sure.
My three-ply toilet paper doesn't feel quite right.
Let me go to Kathleen here. Hi, Kathleen. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi, what's up, Kathleen?
So I just wanted to let you know that Stanley's in Delaware have a plastic-like straw that's made from corn that's biodegradable and compostable.
That to me sounds like exactly what I've been looking for. Listen, not that I've been conducting a worldwide search. I've only been aware of it for about 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But, so it just doesn't have that texture against your teeth. I think what you're saying sounds exactly like what I would want.
Hmm.
Stanley's. Leave it to the hardware stores.
Right. That's what I was worried
about.
To
solve our international straw crisis.
I wonder if those are more expensive and people might be hesitant to use a product like that if it's not going to be cost effective.
At this point in life, splurge.
Here's a good tip. I'm going to go to Tim. Hi, Tim. Good morning.
Hey. What's up?
Hey, buddy. All right. What's your suggestion, Tim? Hey.
So I've been using it for years at the beach when I drink a soda or anything. Surprisingly, Twizzlers.
Oh!
A Twizzler has a straw thing happening. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, bite the ends off. You got yourself a straw right there.
If you get the continuous red vine, right, you mm-hmm. can take that, run it over to the next blanket and put it in their drink mm-hmm. and drink it from 10 feet away.
Yeah.
Do you find that the taste of the Twizzler taints the soda?
Not really. It's actually the opposite.
It enhances it?
The drink, my Twizzler ends up tasting like, you know, Diet Coke, Dr. Yep. Pepper, whatever I end up drinking.
But Marissa can't mash anything with the Twizzler. It's too,
it's too flaccid.
Yeah, uh-huh. You gotta have to put that stainless steel straw right through it.
That's right.
Thanks, man. Hey, by the way, somebody texted in that Amazon has bamboo straws, Casey.
Ooh.
Uh-huh.
See?
There you go. Done and done.
Hey,
you know what you can do, though? If you're worried about it breaking down, if you're worried about your paper straw breaking down as you're mashing it in your drink, tape it to a plastic straw and do it that way, right? You'll keep the integrity intact.
By the way, Marissa, you can ask your bartender to muddle the fruit before they make the drink for you.
Yeah, but it's kind of fun.
It's entertainment.
Yeah. That's I guarantee you that's Marissa's art of seduction.
Yeah.
I have seen her sit there and do
this.
So
where are you from?
Yeah, right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So you were at the Chesney concert, too?
Squish, 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 squish.
Yes, mm-hmm. I had cowboy boots. Oh, it's very safe. There were globs of cops.
So there are some people are saying you can buy glass straws as well. You can buy plastic straws. I mean, the hard plastic. But
you could go without a straw.
Oh, yeah.
You could go...
When bamboo straws will be the norm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can't. The thing is, she could drink it without a straw. She still wants to mash.
I want to mash.
She wants to mash, but you can mash with a spoon.
And my purse might not be big enough for the straw to fit in it.
What did you say? What do you ask the bartender to do?
To muddle the fruit.
Which so is
a muddler is like a mash. It's a blunt object that they use, and they'll put the fruit in there first, and then they smash it really good and get all the juice out of it.
It's pre-smashed, but you enjoy smashing it yourself.
I don't always
enjoy a good smash.
I don't always go to the classiest joints, and I don't know if they have a muddler back there.
Hey, everybody, Mauritius here! Hey! You finally came to my place! Gary?
So why don't people drink like beer out of straws? And I know that some people will do that, and same thing with wine. I've seen,
I think what happens is if you're really relying on the taste, I think the perception is that the straw, affects the taste.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be correct, Preston?
Maybe. Yeah, I'm not sure.
You wrote a book called I drank everything through a straw.
Well, I know with wine you want to get air in it. And part of taking it in through the lips is you kind of breathe in a little bit as you take the... Nick, you're more of a wine drinker than I am. I know that opens up the flavors.
It's supposed to.
Yeah, but beer, I don't know.
Some people will drink wine out of a straw so it doesn't, like, stain their teeth. Like red wine?
Yeah. I do that with coffee a lot.
Do you?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, okay. Well, whatever vessel you put the drink into, it changes it. Like the difference between a bottled beer or a canned beer or pouring a canned beer into a pint glass or getting a draft beer.
Do you know it's overlooked a lot? And you may want to consider this when you have you're out at the bar. A gravy boat. Drink out of that. And they're going to ask questions. It's a great icebreaker.
It can be messy.
Are you drinking gravy? No, it's a vodka and water.
I mean, this is.
I don't know about that vessel thing or not. I hear that. I mean, that's why canned beers are, and we have sponsors who now are happy that they're serving them in cans. It's because hipsters decided that cans were cool again.
Basically,
that's why they got tired of bottles.
You know,
let's do something different.
Let's see if we can use the hipsters to affect popular opinion. Let's introduce the wool straw.
Straw? Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
they're totally, like, no liquid can make it up it.
Did you sit there going... Dude, it's a wool straw.
Oh, my God.
Dude, it's a wool straw.
The great part is I can use it as a scrunchie in my man bun.
You're not using the wool straw?
What were you going to say, Marissa, about the...
Well, I actually helped brew some beer this weekend, so obviously I'm an expert now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kidding, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned that canning beer does save the integrity of the beer better than bottles, and that's why a lot of people...
Then why they quit doing it all those years ago?
They've actually modified the beer can itself. Beer can itself, they've gone to great lengths to make sure that it will maintain the integrity of the beer.
Yep, and that's when you get, like, takeout beer, now they'll put in those crowlers, they call it, where it's a can instead of the bottled, the growlers.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, it's supposed to make the beer better. I don't know.
So if you pour it into a glass, someone would go, clearly this was canned beer.
Clearly, this is from a bottle. I will not have this.
Why, if I was wearing socks, I would ball them up and throw them at you. But I'm not, because I'm a hipster.
I don't wear socks. Yes, he's twirling his mustache.
Twirl my mustache at you.
Yes, my Simon Legree mustache. I do have a tramp stamp, but it's a Hindi symbol for love.
I have not used the paper straw enough to form an opinion as of yet. You know what it does remind me, though, are pixie sticks.
Yes, and that's really what it reminds me of. I was never a fan of pixie sticks because of that.
Yeah, they get all, by the time you get to the end of the powder,
mushy and
they're
crappy,
all mushy, and you got to tear part of it off or you got to bite it off.
Do you know what's very dangerous, though? Mm-hmm. The paper barbecue utensils are very dainty. They'll flare up all the time.
What were they thinking?
It's stupid.
Didn't we try pretzel utensils once for soup or something like that?
Yes, I believe so.
Well, we were talking about the efficacy of the soup bowl, which is genius.
Yeah, right.
And then if you're going to go that step, why not pretzel utensils?
Yeah, cracker spoons.
Cracker spoons.
I wanted to invent that, but
And are there... chocolate straws?
I don't know about chocolate straws. There are chocolate spoons that you can use for coffee to kind of mocha it up a little bit. Yeah.
There's chocolate straws and candy straws, but the whole point is for them to disintegrate.
Well, going back to our earlier conversation, are there chocolate tampons? I mean, think about it.
I'd rather not.
What is this? What is this? It has a string attached to it.
Like M&M's.
Is this a chocolate-covered cherry?
Melts in your cooch, but not in your hooch.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Melts in your cooch, but not in your hooch. What is this?
What happened?
I'm going to go phone call. I have Joe, who wants to talk about straws and beer. And, Joe, you're on the air. Good morning.
Gadzooks,
man. What's up, buddy?
I've had beer through a straw before.
Yep.
And it kind of recarbonates it for me. It, like, you know how when you first pour it out of a tap, it kind of makes it the same way when you drink it through a straw.
I know what you're saying. If I were to drink like a Coke, for example, through a straw, I find it seems gassier, more bubblier, and it makes me burp a lot.
So,
more.
Joe, you end up with a head in your mouth?
Pretty much.
Okay.
No guy ever wants to end up like that.
No. Well, some do.
Some do.
Some love it. And God bless them.
Thanks, Joe.
It's a choice.
No, it's an orientation.
Exactly.
I'm going to go to Ken. Hey, Ken, good morning.
Morning.
What's up, Ken?
So with beer through a straw, the whole reason you pour the beer out is to develop the head, you know, as you were just talking about.
Yep.
But when you drink the beer, part of drinking that beer is getting the smell from the head.
Okay.
It's called Famunda.
Someone should make a beer called Famunda.
I bet it's
got to exist already.
But yes and no. Okay, I mean, like, people are drinking their beer out of a can, out of a bottle, so not everybody pours it out into a snifter or whatever you drink your fancy beers out of. Yeah.
Have you ever seen people drink... sodas or anything that comes in a bottle out of a straw, you put the straw in the bottle?
Yes. Yeah.
I think part of the... Now, do women sometimes, Marissa, opt to not drink out of a bottle or right out of a glass because of lipstick and a straw instead?
Well, lipstick or staining your teeth, all of those things. Or my mother would never drink anything out of a bottle. Like, that would... Like, for me, like, when you see a bride...
Is it vulgar?
I don't know. There's just time and place for that. And I think...
She'd take the bottle, go over to the windowsill... There we go.
I love opening bottles that way.
Yeah. Yes.
There's a great scene in Overboard where Goldie Hawn comes back.
That's
she's opening the beer that way.
Yeah.
That hurts your hand. I try that all the time.
Yeah. You have tiny hands, though.
When you try to crack it on the table?
You do it right. You also have to pull down with the bottle a little bit. That keeps your hand from hurting so much. So if you pull down with the hand that's holding the bottle and wrap the top of it with your other hand, it doesn't hurt as much.
Have you ever sword chopped a top of a champagne bottle?
No, I would like to.
Yeah.
I think it'd be pretty cool.
It looks cool.
It's supposedly the glass doesn't get in to the bottle when you do it. You're actually cutting the top of the bottle off.
Are you?
Yeah. And people who do it, it's for many, it's a presentation at various, it's part of the protocol at various festivals and things.
The carbonation, when the champagne comes out, it blows out any shards of glass
So when you do it,
and, we're watching a
guy and doing instruction. Oh, that's from Good Eats. That's
Alton Brown.
Alton Brown, yeah. So he's showing how you do this. So you take the saber, you rub it up against the neck of the bottle, and the top of it just pops right off when you go through, and then the carbonation pushes all the the glass.
We're watching. Out. We have a saber here, don't we?
We do, yeah.
It
makes a mess, though. We would have to. There you go.
Maybe I had no idea that you were actually cutting the bottle. I just thought that the cork came out.
No, you're cutting the top of that first lip of the bottle off.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Do you think guys would drink beer out of a bottle if the top of the bottle looked like a little? Wait, I probably shouldn't say it out loud.
Okay, I was. You guys were drinking.
I got a question. Yes, Casey, something you want to tell the class? You think guys would drink something out of beer but look like a vagina?
No.
He's saying
I was going male part.
Well, opposite, every bachelorette party ever would buy those bottles of beer.
Right?
That's true. Mm. Yeah. I'm sure there are things that are similar, you know. But, they people get picky about the taste of the stuff in the can and the bottle, if it affects the taste, you know.
Yeah.
Straws are just one more step.
Those are things you think about, huh?
Oh, it's just what, you know.
Dear diary, I wonder if men would drink out of bottles.
Yeah, stop it.
If it looked like penises.
Somebody in this room had mentioned chocolate tampons earlier, right?
Yeah. So. Well, I was trying to help the health industry. And there's an obvious cooperative between Hershey's and Tampax. Right.
Well, Marissa has had it. I thought you would get more support on the phones, Marissa, to be
not
honest,
a one.
On the paper straws, and it's not really happening.
You're a complainer.
I got a lot of hands-up emojis on my Instagram, so I got
the hell does that mean?
I don't know. People were
give
like,
up.
Praise. Yes.
Give up.
Word. Put your hands up.
Like, give up stop. Your stupid cause.
Give it up. Yeah. No. Praise.
No, like, word girl, we support you.
Word girl.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Listen.
It reminds me of Pat Boone's first day in Compton.
Word girl.
Word girl.
Oh, I just hate these goddamn paper straws. They're so.
That's
I mean,
it. Word girl.
That's it.
Word girl. Preach, girl.
Well.
Yes.
If anybody has any leftover plastic straws, send them my way. I will start hoarding them.
Yeah, start collecting your plastic straws.
Yeah,
send them to Marissa.
Because there's a shortage of plastic straws, Marissa. Like, you can't just go down the Monger right now and get a whole handful of them.
All right. Anyhow, thank you. This has been Marissa's day out.
But wait, you know what?
Steve Show.
She was due because she works.
I agree.
She works hard when she steps in for Kathy, and she deserved her time to vent, even if it was ultimately proved self-serving and useless.
Yeah. She's usually not right here in the studio with us. I'm like, let's do a Marissa topic today.
Well, thank you.
Word boy.
Word. All right. So
word girlfriend.
I would like to give away a 4-pack of tickets to see Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban in concert at The Man. This is on July 26th, so it is next week. The Philadelphia Orchestra performs a magical score from the film while the entire film plays in high definition on a 40-foot screen.
Pretty Why aren't they calling it the Azkaban?
The Azkaban.
Right?
Yeah, that makes sense. So let's take caller number 18, 215-263-WMMR. Tickets are on sale now via Ticketmaster.com or at The Man box office. So go ahead and give us a call, and we will set you up with that. We're going to do the Bizarre File, and we're also going to have Hank Flynn, a reporter from Fox 29, who is actually going to participate in our belly flop championship.
He's hog wild to do this.
Yeah, so we'll find out what his story is about that in just a moment or two. And Jeremy Piven stopping by, Frank Caliendo coming by. It's a busy morning. We like it. Stay with us.
93.3 WMMR presents Jackson's Local Shots Artist of the Month, Honey Tiger. Celebrating our area's best talent. Bringing it to you on air, online, and in the community. Click Local Shots at WMMR.com to see and hear more. Honey Tiger, Jackson's Local Shots Artist of the Month. Sponsored by Family and Company Jewelers. Find a band that rocks her world at Family. 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
Let's do the Bizarre File.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre, Bizarre File.
All right, we're going to begin with this one.
All right.
A sicko broke into a horse stable and committed two sexual acts, claiming that the filly gave its consent by winking at him.
No.
Oh, that slutty horse.
Yeah.
Daniel Raymond Webb Jackson was jailed for 10 months after
having sex with a horse.
After he was caught with the when the trainer had installed cameras in his stables. The incident took place in New South Wales, Australia. Webb Jackson pleaded not guilty and tried to justify his perverted act to the court by claiming that the filly had smelled his groin and winked at him.
Smelled his D and was getting aroused.
The trainer and his had just installed cameras in the stables as a security measure due to suspicions over disturbances the previous month.
It's possible that the guy misread the signs.
And when the trainer, after they put the cameras in to the as security measures due to disturbances, after the stable owners suspected a break-in during the evening in question, the police discovered that Webb Jackson was hiding in the stable and he was arrested following a brief scuffle.
I was near a horse one time and I thought it winked initially. I started to remove my pants and then I realized it was just a fly.
Oh.
And it was that was that. So it's easy to misinterpret the signs, but I think we've all been there.
The trainer for the horse who had been preparing it to race said the animal was no longer the same after the traumatizing experience. At 10:23 a.m., an emergency call to the 2300 block of Buckland Lane was dispatched as a reported bee sting. And responding firefighters quickly discovered how big of an understatement that was. When their truck pulled up to the home, they saw a cleaning lady being attacked by a swarm of some 80,000 bees.
Oh, my God.
80,000. And were these, in fact, Africanized honeybees?
Yes, they were.
Bees in the car! Bees everywhere!
They saw the woman, and she was approximately 50 years old, which is identified by her first name, Maria. She was in the home with three other cleaners and had stepped out to her car to grab a mop. And in doing so, she had come to be viewed as a threat to the swarm of Africanized bees whose neighbors said had been taking up residence in a nearby drainage pipe. That insight would not come until later. As the Orange County Fire Authority team arrived at the horrific scene, its top task was trying to figure out how to separate the woman from the mass of attacking insects. One of the responding firefighters said the bees were almost in clusters, maybe the size of golf balls, all over her.
Jeez.
She had them on her face, around her mouth, around her ears, her neck, and her hair.
The thing they say with Africanized honeybees is that they don't look different than regular bees. It's just their aggressiveness that makes them so formidable.
Donning protective gear would take too long, the firefighters decided, so they sprung into action without it. The emergency responders grabbed a carbon dioxide fire extinguisher and began spraying the bees that were attacking the woman, who was now barely conscious. First responders were spraying, and they were freezing the bees as they were kind of hovering and landing on us, they said. They stopped the brunt of the attack, but when they got the woman to the hospital, she was still covered in bees. She was also in critical condition, having been stung more than 200 times. Her son told firefighters she's expected to survive, although her recovery will be arduous. He said, when you get somebody stung hundreds of times, bees injecting that venom, you're going to have a serious issue. Anybody, allergy or not, is going to be in serious condition after that.
That's staggering that she's not dead, because they when they first started to make the push north, you were constantly hearing stories out of southern Texas of people getting killed all the time.
After the attack, responders closed several blocks nearby, hoping to prevent anyone else from becoming an unwitting victim. They then called in the experts, a local bee company, and by that afternoon, people in bee suits had removed several buckets full of honey.
What's the most you've ever been stung? I was stung.
Just like twice.
Six times? Yeah, I closed my hand down on a whole bunch of bees. It hurt.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Well, I was mowing the lawn the other day, and I was weed whacking, and I came across this giant pile of what I at first was like, oh, this is just a giant anthill, and I started weed whacking around it and weed whacking the hill, and then it dawned on me that this is a beehive and not an anthill, so yeah. I immediately stopped. Luckily, I had the pest control people come out yesterday. He called them cicada killers, so they don't really attack people. But, like, dude, that's how that stuff sort of happens. Well, is you just, you know,
yeah, you end
go
up with
over with a lawnmower and
and freak them out.
Yep. Six German winery workers were struck down with rabbit fever after they unknowingly drank grapes pressed with an infected mouse in it.
What is rabbit fever?
It's a sickness, and it gives you flu-like or
A craving for Haas and Pfeffer?
No, like E. coli type of thing. All of the workers, two women and four men, became ill, complaining of fever, difficulty swallowing, and diarrhea. Doctors were baffled when tests showed the workers tested positive for tularemia caused by the Francisella, whatever.
That's the Italian dessert you like, Preston.
Yes, Francisella, Torlanus bacteria. None had been bitten by ticks, had hunted or eaten infected animals, all of which are risk factors for the rare condition. Health officials began searching the entire premises of the winery to try and work out the source of the infection. They discovered that workers had consumed grape must, which is freshly crushed juice that contains the skins, seeds, and stems. Doctors further revealed the harvesters were significantly more likely to have had juice from a batch of grapes collected by a machine. Traces of this were found in the unfinished wine made from grape must, and a further inspection of the wine and preparation by officials showed it contained small traces of wood mouse as well.
Oh, my God. Nice.
The vintner, whose identity was also withheld, confirmed the occasional presence of rodents in the mechanically collected grapes. Doctors published the case in a report of the New England Journal of Medicine.
Has a pulpy taste with just a hint of field mouse.
Mm-hmm. All right, and then one last story, and we will wrap it up. Let's end with this one. A baby was found safe at the home of a relative Tuesday after an unfounded report that the child had been thrown out of a vehicle over a cliff.
What?
Yeah, it didn't happen. A 911 caller reported the purported incident at 12:50 a.m. Multiple agencies launched a search for the infant, whose age and gender were not discussed. Sheriff's deputies and some 75 firefighters descended on the scene, assisted by helicopters and canine units. The child's parents were detained for questioning in connection with the matter. The father called authorities and said that during an argument, the mother had claimed to have tossed the baby over the cliff.
Dear God.
The mother subsequently admitted she had not thrown the child out of her vehicle and that the baby was, in fact, at a family member's house.
Did she throw something out of the vehicle that was thought to be a child?
No, she just claimed that she did. Okay. She was, I guess, pissed off at the ex and said, you know, well, I threw the baby off a cliff.
Well, there you go.
You know how you do.
Yeah. You know she gets that way, you know, threatening to murder our children.
Around 3 a.m., the fire department confirmed the baby was located and everybody was okay, thank God, but it scared the hell out of everyone. And that is what I have in the bizarre file for you this morning. All right, so tonight is the event. We have the Belly Flop Championships taking place, and this will be at Valley Forge Casino Resort at Valley Beach Poolside.
Perfect.
We have our contestants all set. Yeah, it's going to be wonderful.
Yeah.
Contestants all set to go, and one more has been added. We want to welcome from Fox 29, Hank Flynn, to the show.
Yeah. Thank you.
How are you, Hank?
I'm good. Better today, that's for sure.
Okay, so this is all... this all came together. I was busy yesterday. I didn't even know about this. So all of a sudden, you're like, I got to be in this contest. Is that what happened here?
It all starts with wanting to do a good story. Like the belly flop contest to me, and this is right in my wheelhouse, man.
You're a belly flopper then, I guess, right?
I am now.
Yeah.
I gave it really, I've done a bunch of accidental ones. I used to be the diving board Knievel when I was a kid.
You
can't do anything cool off the diving board without screwing it up a time or two. So back flops, belly flops, they're all accidental, but I found out yesterday by trying to get into this, and I knew I needed to give you guys some video for you to even consider having me.
And that's actually, so on Twitter, just to, as a side note here, Lucy Nolan, our friend at Fox 39, posted a video of you that you had posted of you doing a pretty damn good belly flop.
Listen, it took a while to get there. I mean, the first one I did off of the starting blocks. And by the way, thanks for the Haverford Area YMCA for having us out there yesterday. But off the starting blocks for racing, swimming, you look at 2.5-3 feet up.
Yeah.
And you do it, and you think you're going to do it. Talking about it's great. Everybody's a coach.
Yes. Everybody has an idea.
Everybody tell you how to do a belly flop.
Yeah.
Social media's blowing. Everybody's telling my cousin Angie from Georgia, you can't stretch out. You can't do it that way. You're bending your knees. I was like, I didn't see you there yesterday. Mm-hmm. I've never seen you do it. And everybody's telling me how to do it. Nobody does it. There you go.
Yeah, okay.
But it's
right.
That was the first one.
Right.
And that was a complete cop out.
We're watching. Your hands and feet went in first, and that's not a good belly flop.
Right.
It's got to be stomach first.
I'm better now.
Okay.
I started going off the side of the pool. I figured out there's not a great way to do it. My biggest fear is cracking my throat good and hard. And that's the one, if you keep showing that one's not good, and that's not the one that got me in.
Okay.
But it's right in between the demolition derby and mud wrestling.
That's really was the idea.
Right.
And a belly flop. This is for the non-athlete athlete.
A couple of years ago, the crowd urged Steve and I to do belly flops. I'll never do it again, by the way. I'm not going to do it tonight. So
we had
our
clothes on, yeah.
And we had our clothes on. And I tell you what, you can hurt your neck and your face.
Yes.
That's what hurt when I did it. It wasn't my stomach. I had a neck thing that went on.
Do you know what I hurt? I hurt my Apple Watch, which I'd forgotten to take off.
Oh, yeah. Oh man.
But I got to tell you, Hank, this is the deal. We have people naturally assume, well, you got to be 400 pounds. You got to be this. You got to be that. We've had more than a number of guys who are like maybe 150, you know, who are actually thin.
Skinny.
But they get a nice arch. They come down. And there's also a presentation involved. So it's this thing. And now it's for bragging rights. It's become a cool thing.
Well, I mean, Casey was straightening me out on the phone on this yesterday that it's 70% technique and 30% presentation or something.
That's kind of how I judge it. Yeah. Right.
But that's your personal.
That's my problem. I'm a judge.
The other judges?
Yeah, the other judges. So there'll be other judges. But, you know, the crowd, if they hear an audible smack, that belly flop smack, the thing that usually makes people around the pool when you're not intending to do it go, ooh.
Right.
That's what we're looking
Preston
for.
Preston and Steve aren't judges. They're the hosts of the event. Yes. I'm a judge. We have a former contestant as a judge, a couple of other surprise judges that are going to be there. And everybody judges differently. I'm just telling you that my parameters is I want to base most of my stuff on the actual flop itself. But presentation does matter.
Yeah, right. Some other people judge heavily on presentation.
I ask you this in gratitude, guys. You know I'm thankful to be in. The story's going to be infinitely better. I mean, I can stand on the side of the pool in a suit and tell you about these guys jumping into the pool.
Right.
Or I can do it myself and tell you what it's like and how it felt. You know,
okay.
It's an infinitely better story. But I've got to ask you because it came up in your tweet this morning. Am I a contestant or am I an honorary contestant? We have rules around these things.
We
don't talk about them that much, but we have them. We've got to make sure that we do things right.
We've been going back and forth because technically you asked to get into the contest after the submissions were cut off. The deadline was cut off. Now, we would figure we would float you a courtesy by allowing you to compete, but it would be unfair to the contestants who did get in on time and followed the rules to have another contestant now added that could win the cash prize.
Listen, fair is fair, and you're right. I was late. I would add though that if I were to win first, second, or third, I think there was a cash prize attached to all three of those.
Mm-hmm.
My money all goes to Del Valle Alzheimer's Association.
That's wonderful. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, but
so you bring your game tonight.
Oh,
bring your game this evening.
You guys let me into this, and you didn't have to.
Yeah.
So I told you in a tweet yesterday, I will bring the pain on this.
Okay.
There's no half-stepping on
by
this.
By the way, you were doing the right thing by jumping off the block there. That's we have an elevated platform from that to actual water in the pool.
Yeah, it's about that
It's
height.
About the same height. Mm-hmm. So you're practicing pretty much the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see it. But I think you'll enjoy it, too, because there is a level of pageantry to it that just keeps skipping up as people try. So maybe their flopping game isn't all it should be, but then they bring a something else that gets the judges. Casey's a hard line because he was a diver, you know, he in school. So he knows what he looks for. But we'll see what happens.
Well, I mean, and if you can't make it tonight, you guys are going to have a lot of beautiful video, I'm guessing, of this on your website.
Yes.
And my story will air on Fox 29 tomorrow night.
So tomorrow night.
The inside view from the diver's standpoint.
Hey, I'm
a mackerel.
Real quick, I'm going to go to last year's champion. We have the Hebrew Hammer who's on the line.
Hebrew Hammer.
Hey, Hammer, how you doing, bud?
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Oh, my God.
We are awesome. So you're calling in with some advice for Hank?
Yeah, I just want to, you know, as past champion last year, I just want to give him some things that went through my head and how I want it.
Yeah, okay.
I worked the crowd real hard. That's a major point. Get the crowd working beforehand.
Because
the crowd has a lot to do with it. And you have a couple drinks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Have a couple of drinks.
Yeah.
Sure. He's a done deal, Hank says. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that'll be fine. About working the crowd, part of me thinking, I feel like it's going to be sort of an uphill battle for me because I'll get out there, and you guys are the everybody station, and people are going to this is the negative Nelly in my head. I'm thinking, the TV reporter. They let him in to get a story or whatever it is. So getting the crowd going, that may be a challenge. I don't know. But, like, listen, all stops out.
Okay.
You're going to give it a shot? Listen,
I'm worried about the groin shot. You talked about the throat.
Dude, yeah. I tell you what. To that point, when I went in, talking about when we jumped in, Preston, I definitely had a south of the border slap. And you do feel it, man.
Hammer, did you have any issues with the groin area?
Now, I actually had some red marks for about a week from the bathing suit. I don't know if Hank saw the bathing suit I wore last year.
Was he the guy in the red?
No, that was one of your judges now. That's
Sassy.
Charles. Yeah, Sassy. Yeah. He's going to be one of the judges. But the Hebrew Hammer just entered.
The Borat.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was wearing the mankini. Yeah, this is him. We have video of you playing in the studio.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so, yeah, that can't be
the
fun.
The standard is sky high.
It's very
exactly.
High. And this may be your testing year. Next year, you may be ready to really
listen,
go.
Listen, who knows where we'll be next year. It's got to happen tonight. Yeah.
You do it. You bring it tonight. Then you come back again. You know, we'll consider this your first crack at it. No pun intended.
Hammer, you're not. Are you competing this year? Are you going to come out or anything?
I miss getting the competition in. I would like to come out and do the ceremonial first flop if that's possible.
Well, you know, listen. Contact Casey right after the Casey will contact you, or we'll you know, vice versa.
Last year's champion, that could be fun.
I think that'd be fun too.
I think I had my time in the spotlight. Everybody still talks about it. I still want to be part of it though. I would
understood.
Like to do the ceremonial first. Flop.
Yeah, if you're a champion, you can always be a part of it. Get in touch. You got Casey's contacts, CaseyBoyWMMR.com, okay?
Not a problem, guys.
All right, buddy. Take care, Hammer. The Hebrew Hammer, last year's champion.
It was hilarious.
He was fantastic. All right, so Hank, we'll see you there tonight, man.
Thanks for letting me in, guys. You will not regret it.
All Hammer's right. in tow, so come and see it. And by the way, free of charge to see this spectacle at the Valley Beach poolside at Valley Forge Casino Resort. And we get started. Doors open at 5, cocktails, 6 o'clock. We kind of hang in, get things going. Around 7 o'clock, we get the whole thing started. It takes only about an hour.
Yeah, it's not incredibly long. Yep. It's a very casual, cool vibe.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a break. Thank you, Hank Flynn from Fox 29 for being here. When we return, Jeremy Piven in our studio, who's going to be at Punchline tomorrow and Saturday. We'll be right back.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
So we're excited to have our next guest back in the studio. He's going to be performing at Punchline tomorrow night and Saturday. Charity events that are going on. I'll give you the specifics on that whole thing. And you've seen him in everything from Entourage to Old School to Gross Point Blank to even Say Anything.
Say Anything.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jeremy Piven is here with us this morning.
Thank you. It's good to be here, you guys.
Good to see you, sir.
Yeah, man.
May I say, you're a very stylish gentleman. I was looking at your Instagram account. You're always very well put together.
Well, thank you, sir. I really appreciate that. You are a very confident gentleman to be able to wield a compliment so freely.
Well, I'm curious, is there a staff of people that create that look, or is this all you?
No,
there's not a Jeremy Piven tour bus that has a whole staff of stylists at the ready.
There would be a lot of clowns stepping out of that tour bus. It would be a clown bus. No, I'm I do my viciously mediocre style myself. It's just me.
It works for you, though.
It does work.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know what? I think men need to do more. See, women dress for women, you know, and men don't dress for other men unless they're gay gentlemen.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, so I think if men consult women and say, hey, what do you think of this?
That's actually brilliant.
You know what? It would solve so many problems because then a woman would say, that shirt is birth control. take that shirt off. Why do you wear the same dirty hat? Please take that off. You know what I mean? And a lot of problems could be solved. Yeah. So, you know, it's good to run your look by, you know, the other gender.
I have teenage sons, and I've told them, I'm like, listen to the women in your life that tell you that doesn't look good.
Right.
Because it will pay back tenfold.
You're gleaning intelligence from them.
Yes.
You're it's like going behind enemy lines to find out what you're not going to get otherwise.
Yeah.
So the first time you want to find out you're dressed horribly is when you're out at a bar in a social situation trying to meet someone.
Right.
So you're exactly right. In radio, we're blessed with we can be astoundingly casual in our presentation, which is cool. But did you come by that knowledge over the course of your life, or were you always sort of a snappy, put together guy?
You know, I grew up in Chicago. I was born in New York and then grew up in Chicago, and I grew up in a theater family. So from the time I was very young, you know, my father would always he had his own style.
Yeah.
He would wear like leather caps, and like, you know, we were in Chicago and he was wearing, you know, denim shirts, and I come from a family of thespians, you know, theater actors. And I remember as a kid, One day they, you know, we all had to stand up in school and in like third grade and say what our parents did. And I said that my parents steal shoes because I didn't understand what an actor was.
Sure.
And, and my mom had basically provided herself in the theater with wardrobe. So
right.
She had a lot of shoes at the house. So they had to bring my parents in, and my parents had to explain to me,
what,
you know, we have a theater, we're performers, and they broke it all down. And it was amazing. And I, you know, been performing with them ever since.
You've been in entertainment, what, 30 plus years? How many years?
Over 40 years on the stage.
On the stage.
Yeah. But yeah, and it's interesting because on paper, it's funny. Like, I guess I kind of technically broke out in doing Entourage, but I was already a grown man.
Sure.
I was probably 40 movies into my career when we started Entourage.
I was well aware. We were all well aware.
Well, because you're a connoisseur of pop culture.
Yeah, but you're right. And it must be sort of weird when you have that many films that are, up to that point, were sort of iconically pop culture.
Yeah.
And then you get Entourage, which is, and everyone's going, oh, because I remember you, I mean, one of the absolute seminal comedy shows of all time, the Larry Sanders Show.
Yes.
You know, you played the head writer. You were with, I mean, to work with Gary Shandling, you were a young Judd Apatow.
Yeah, that was a dream.
Yeah.
That was a dream. Yeah, Judd and I were about the same age. We were just kids, and he was, I mean, that's an incredible story, that guy. Someone should do a documentary about him. And by the way,
well, Apatow did. He did.
Well, the doc he did on Gary, the Zen Diaries, was so brilliant, and I think they'll be showing that forever in terms of just like anyone's spiritual journey, which is incredible. And yeah, Gary was, I was right out of college, and you know, he was a genius, and just to be around that on the Larry Sanders Show, people look back on that show, anyone that was looking at the 90s, and they would say it was that and Seinfeld that were kind of the most influential of that decade. So he was an absolute genius, and just to be around that and Jeffrey Tambor and
Shandling impresses me, especially for young aspiring people of that time, for Apatow, for yourself, as very encouraging and nurturing. Was he that way?
Yeah, I mean, they were such geniuses that just to observe that, to me, was priceless. So that kind of informed a lot of everything that I did from then on. But
right.
just the level that he played at was like no other. If you look back at that, the writing, the insight, and it basically kicked off all original programming on HBO, and there would be no Entourage if there wasn't a Larry Sanders Show or Sopranos or Sex in the City or any of that.
That's absolutely valid. I mean, it was for people who have never experienced it, go back and check it out. It would still hold up. It was fall down funny.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just one of those things that will always be part of, you know, of the higher echelon of pop culture. Very cool.
For sure. And it was one of those shows where Gary obviously was a stand-up. And I grew up, you know, right out of college, my first job was at Second City. So I was doing sketch comedy and all that stuff. So my background is in improv and sketch comedy and all that kind of stuff, along with the straight acting. And watch this transition. I feel like all roads lead to stand-up, and here we are.
Yes.
At Punchline.
That's right.
Tomorrow
night. No, it's true.
That's a transition, boys.
No, yeah. It's a likely
and
progression.
Girls.
And I think interviews and seeing what you've been saying about it, you are being very respectful of the art. You know that you are a workman at this point, and you're getting, you know, you obviously have the chops. You've been at this. You've been improvisationally, comedically trained, but you have an appreciation for the art of the stand-up comedian. And you had an encounter with, I think Joe Rogan was sort of suspicious about your capabilities, and then you ran in. If the story is correct, it may be apocryphal. You ran into him, and he said, he kind of gave you the nod and said, you're actually working it.
Yeah, well, he's obviously a very opinionated guy.
Yeah.
You know, and he's, you know, there's something incredibly just authentic and great about that guy, and he's built his own empire based on that authenticity.
Right.
And I think that, you know, he very basically voiced, he was like, great, that's all we need, another actor trying stand-up. And then he saw me, and then he, you know, realized that I do take it seriously. I really do, and I love it, and I love the form. And I'm just learning as much as I can, and this is not like I'm doing some sort of just you know, appearance where I'm running the clock out, doing Q&A, doing quick 20 minutes, and other people are
balloon coming. Animals.
Yeah, yeah, I'm doing an hour set, and I'm having a blast, and I love it. And it's a great way for, you know, if you've seen me in anything and you gravitated towards my work, but it's a great way for me to not be playing a fictional character,
right?
And to be showing up as myself and guiding you through what I think is funny. And my point of view and the stories of being on different sets and a lifetime of acting. So I'm having a blast.
It's great.
I do impressions. I mean, it's a straight up stand up act.
Yeah.
You know, for sure.
Yeah.
Sorry, Nick.
That's okay. So you mentioned Entourage, of course, and I'm sure you get to recognize probably the most for that and maybe PCU as well. But I've been a fan of some of the things that maybe people didn't know about as much. And I love the movie. For whatever reason, I love it. Judgment Night, I thought was fantastic.
That's one of my favorite junk food movies.
Absolutely.
If you've never seen it, it's a bunch of guys who rent a bus. They're going to the game. Yeah. They get off on the wrong exit. Dennis Leary's a drug kingpin.
Yeah.
It's one of those high concept 70s style, though it wasn't in the 70s, movies that just really, really clicked. It's fun.
Yeah, that was an amazing movie. That was, and then shot back in my hometown in Chicago. And that was actually speaking, you know, because you guys are obviously on the radio, but that was the first time that they actually, for a soundtrack, mixed kind of like different genres, if you remember.
Yeah.
It was the first time they took like hip hop and heavy metal and just kind of put it all together on a soundtrack that people love. And Cuba Gooding Jr. and just the cast was amazing.
Yeah.
Incredible.
And then post Entourage, you did a show that probably most of our listeners didn't watch, but Mr. Selfridge was a really great program on PBS. And you were a phenomenal actor in it. And it really highlighted your ability to do something that really kind of was the polar opposite to Entourage
and Ari Gold.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, the opportunity came up as soon as I wrapped Entourage, and I thought, yeah, go overseas and work with some of the best actors in the world. And I was already kind of like growing up watching reruns of Monty Python and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I was so influenced by it. And being over there, because I'd gone to school and studied Shakespeare over there in London, so to go back there and work with some of the best actors in the world and be a part of a show like that was incredible. And then when I found out they were putting it on PBS, I knew that it'd be a very select crowd. And listen, your life has changed. Had Showtime picked it up, or HBO, it would have been a different story in terms of the reach. But it was an incredible experience. I had the time of my life. So,
So based on a legitimate character, correct? Stores is it an amalgam of other people? Is it?
No, it was based on very specifically a guy named Harry Selfridge who invented shopping essentially,
yeah.
And the department store and Selfridge's still to this day is thriving and was voted one of the best stores in the world just a couple of years ago. So he was a serious influence and quite a colorful character, and I loved it. They have different contracts here, so we signed on for 4 years and we did the full. But I mean, people love it over there, and,
right?
You know, we could go back and do a special. We don't know.
I'm going through your IMDb,
yeah.
and there's just so many things that you've done that I love.
It looks like I'm literally kidding. It looks like I made it up.
Yeah,
you know,
no, I mean, your first movie was One Crazy Summer.
Yeah,
I love that movie, and it's one of those movies that, and Better Off Dead. I was like, I can't wait to show my children that. Are you and John Cusack friends?
Yeah, I had met John when we were 8 years old, and we were both...
You were in the same town, were you not?
Yeah. And we started working with my parents and getting up at the Piven Theater and performing. And so we've kind of... And his sister Joan and the entire family studied with my family. And, you know, our mothers are best friends, and so our families are intertwined for sure.
I love that. Yeah. I love it. And I don't... It's just dawning on me that we play a clip from you all the time, at least once a week.
Really?
We play. Yeah, it's from Gross Point Blank.
Gross Point Blank.
Okay. We will either play this.
10 years, oh, man.
Yeah. That's
10.
Right.
Yeah.
Or if the number 10 comes up, I have this.
10. Yeah.
I love it. You know what? That's an example of, you know, John was a movie star, obviously, from the time we were God, 16 years old.
Right.
So that was, I mean, that just didn't exist. Imagine going to high school with a guy and suddenly, like, you know, we were always on stage together, but he was the guy taking the train into the city, you know, and auditioning, and suddenly he just blows up, and we just couldn't have been more proud of him. And so he was doing, you know, these huge films, and I would go and unbeknownst to him and audition. And then, you know, in the case of Gross Point Blank, the clip you just played, that's an example of probably the first 40 movies that I did, which would be like, I would have one line. Yeah. And I would show up on set.
It'd be a good line, though.
Yeah, it would be. Yeah. It would be a good line, or it would be, may I help you? Yeah. Literally would be the line. Like in Rush Hour 2, where I played the gay Versace salesman, the role was for a saleswoman. And the line was, may I help you? And I said, can I play him gay? And can I just keep talking? And they said, sure. And sure enough, if I just kind of dig in, then suddenly one scene turns into two, into three, and then you've got, there we go. And then you've got, you know.
That's where your improvisational ability comes in, though.
Exactly.
And you found a way to, in the earlier part of your career when you were that guy, oh, I know that guy. That guy's been in, before you're known as Jeremy Piven. Oh, that's right. Jeremy Piven. And before it was like, oh, that guy. Like in Say Anything, there's a couple of lines that you steal the scene for a moment. The whole, you know, I got hurt real bad one time. I never want that again. You stole the scene there. And then the, you know, give me my keys.
There you go.
You're the cashier. Wow.
Real short lines. And then boom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you go with that intention? I know you can't overact and overdo the scene.
Because... Oh, no, I can overact. No, I mean, you know.
But without the fear of you don't want to, obviously, as you're an upcoming actor, you don't want to piss off the director and have a reputation as a guy who's too much, but you also want to let them know what you can do.
Yeah, you brought up an interesting point. Listen, if you're worried on set about doing too much, you know, going over the top, bringing in too much, then you're not going to contribute on whatever level that you're capable of. Because, you know, there are times, you know, for me, you want to be overprepared. If anyone asked me for advice and you haven't, I would say, like, you know, it's true. There are no small roles. So if you bring in all this alternate dialogue and you've got a backstory to your character and you're being very specific and you know all these, you know, who everyone is to you and all that kind of stuff, and you come in there guns blazing, it may be a little bit awkward at first. You know, people are kind of going, who is this guy? What's going on here? But then they're going to take a look at dailies and go, oh, okay, there's something here. Huh. You know what? Let's bring this guy back for this scene. We could put him in here. And suddenly you're fleshing out a character that didn't exist, and you've made a career for yourself. Because, by the way, I'm not any one particular type. You look at me and go, I don't know what type he is. I don't know how old he is. I don't know his ethnicity. You know what I mean? I'm this weird.
But you're right. A classic. To me, the career is to envy. We're always character actors that worked constantly and work constantly because they're applicable to so many different movies. Saying what you're saying now remind me of someone that we're all in love with. We think she sort of rose up the same way. You worked with her in The Goods, Catherine Hahn.
Oh, my God.
Who, for example, in the scene in Step Brothers, she steals so many scenes in that movie. And she's just one of these people who just comes in and does it. And you're right.
Well, but that's a little different. Step Brothers is directed and written by my brother-in-law, Adam McKay, who's married to my sister, Shira. And Adam is a guy who encourages improv. So that's why you see Will, whenever he works with Adam, he just Step Brothers, Anchorman, the other guys.
He's actually a friend of the show. We've had him on a number of times. Just a great guy and a guy who loves to talk about the art of filmmaking and comedy.
He's from here, by the way. He grew up in Philly.
Of course he is. Yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, he is. And Adam is a genius, and he encourages improv. So Catherine flourishes in his movies. And yes, she's a genius, and she's unstoppable and will continue to have a career. So, yeah, you got to be. And the thing that Adam does is that he encourages actors who think they can't improvise. And he is a master at, like, saying, listen, just get out of your own way and have fun. And it's usually the actors with a drama background that can be the best improvisers, because they know who their character is. If they get out of their own way and just speak in that character's voice, you're going to be fine.
Yeah, it's very cool.
You just made me realize it. Yeah. Jeremy, you're a lot like a porn actress who can not only be a MILF, but a teen Asian and Latino.
There you go.
Categorized as all those things. You're like, I'll buy that.
Yeah.
That sounds like
a compliment.
Yeah, it's weird.
You remember, he led with a compliment too. So yeah,
your dresser could be in porn.
Yeah,
I didn't say that.
It sounded like gibberish, but it's your show, so.
Well, I just think of two college movies that you were in, and there were completely different characters. You got your PCU character, and then the guy that you play in Old School, which are, you know, were essentially two different. You're kind of all
the nemesis and the hero in similar scenarios.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just give you just another example of what it's like to be a journeyman actor. Todd Phillips, who wrote and directed Old School. I had read the script and freaked out, and I said to my agent, can I just go in on anything? And they said, yeah, just go in and meet the director. I went and met him, and he was just a great guy and such an insightful genius. And he looked at me, and he goes, yeah, there's really nothing left in the movie. The only character that's left is the dean. He's kind of the villain.
Yeah.
And he goes, I'm looking at you, and I'm talking to you, and you know, you can't play that role because you look like... you know, maybe one of Vince Vaughn's friends. You have that swagger. He's like, you're built like a gymnast. I was like, I don't even know what that means, but thank you. I was like, thank you? I was like, wow, that's amazing. And I said, you know what, let me come in and audition. And he said, great. So, you know, the character's incredibly nerdy. I went and found a terrible sweater vest, these awkward glasses. I did a comb over.
I love those glasses.
And I came in and I played the character. And
But you are a classic good nemesis in that... there is a reason that he got to where he was. He was picked on, and so there is an element there. You gotta find something that is, you know, human and connectable, even to the best villains, have something that make you say, well, I can kind of see that.
Yeah, I mean, he was a guy they locked in a dumpster, and he's been bitter ever since, and he's going to get his revenge.
He got out.
I got out. Exactly. And,
joke's on you. I got out.
Yeah, exactly. That was, I mean, that's one of those movies that totally holds up as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I was there the day that Snoop was playing, and Will comes out naked and then just starts running through the streets. And Will's one of these guys where, you know, he also has a background in sketch.
Yeah.
I did Second City, and he was in Groundlings. And, you know, he's a guy who commits fully. So when he comes out and he has a sock over his power source, if you will, he's really doing that on the day. And you're on set, and Will just fully commits.
Wow.
I went to Second City. I had only been to Chicago one time, and my wife and I went, and I was blown away. First of all, just in the waiting room, and you're looking at all the pictures on the wall of all the people that have come through there, and you're like, holy crap, it's like everybody has come through there. Yeah. And then you go and you sit and you observe all these people in this element, and I was blown away. And I have no desires of being an actor, but all of a sudden I'm watching this, I'm like, I could never do this. And I had that feeling, I could never ever do what these guys are doing. It was just awesome.
You could if you've gone through the system, and that's what's really kind of fun about it. I mean, I remember, you know, because I was brought up on the stage and doing improv my whole life, and yet I remember auditioning for Second City and being, you know, very intimidated by it, but I was prepped and ready to go. So it's for anyone listening, of course, if you're an intelligent person, you're going to be intimidated by any new form.
Yeah.
But it's like that, you know, Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours thing where, like, you know, you just got to stay after it and get some consistency, and you're just going to get better at it.
Yeah.
Which leads me to stand up. Keep bringing it back.
No, so to that point.
Yeah.
And I was reading an interview with you about, you know, you pay your dues with bombing. I did stand up for about 10 years, and it's you have to put in the time. That's all that's going to happen. And everyone will bomb. We were watching the Robin Williams documentary last night.
Yeah.
Everybody goes through it. How do you feel? You got to feel it, you know, because apparently, you know, you're getting a lot of encouragement. It's being received well. How does it feel to you right now?
It feels like I've got a really solid, fun set.
Cool.
Where I have people, you know, at first when I was doing it and telling stories and it would go silent, I would panic. And now I realize, because I have stand up saying to me, you know, they're hanging on your every word.
Yeah.
Because I'm a storyteller, and I've been a storyteller my whole life. So it's not, listen, I've, you know, being on the stage for 40 years, that helps with stand up. So it's not like I've only been doing stand-up for a couple of years. It's like I've been doing it for decades because I've had that exchange with the audience. So the variable is material. And for me, you know, telling these fun stories, doing impressions, and just, you know, grinding and figuring out that perfect set to me is thrilling. So I'm having the time of my life.
It's very cool. It's cool to come in with that skill set you have that most comedians starting out would not have.
Right.
A decades old experience with being on stage,
yeah, being
and knowing those things that can be distractions. And as you say, it's really material centric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've always wanted the freedom my entire life. You know, you know, we've been talking about all these different movies, and you know, they're written and they have a great three-act structure. And then you got some dummy like me coming in and improvising and whatnot, rocking the boat a bit. And now, you know, so I would come with all these options and beg, borrow, and plead to kind of like get my stuff in so I can contribute. And now, be careful what you wish for, because now I have all the freedom in the world. Now I'm on stage.
Right.
I am. I'm the screenwriter and the star and the producer and the editor and everything. Yeah. And it's daunting, and I take it very seriously, and it's scary. And so, you know, I do feel a certain responsibility to it. So it's been incredible, and Punchline is a place that I've heard about and that I've been looking forward to playing for a while.
It's a great room. You're going to love it. Yeah,
absolutely. So we're doing shows tomorrow night, Saturday night, and then Sunday we're doing a benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is – and I'm glad you brought that up because – this is that group of athletes, the hockey players that were killed in that bus accident, just blew everybody's mind. So it was such a tragic story. And how did you get behind this? Because that's what the benefit's about.
You know what? I'd read about it and I'd heard about it. And someone had reached out to me on Twitter and said, would you ever want to, you know, do a benefit and contribute? I said, it would be my honor. And they said, really? And I said, sure. So, and here we are. And you know, it's one of those things where I'm just honored and lucky to be able to bring people in and get some money for this kid.
Yeah. It's Ryan Strasnitsky.
Exactly. Yeah. And Ryan at 19 years old is paralyzed. And the first thing he said was, you know, he wants to start training immediately for the Paralympics.
Wow.
And it's going to cost $300,000 to trick out his house so that, you know, he can achieve that. And this is one of the ways to get this kid money. And he's inspiring. And you know, if you come out and see some comedy, not only are we going to laugh together and hang out, take some pictures, but we get to, you know, donate some money to this kid to help him live his dream.
That's great.
That's awesome. And this is a hockey town, so I think you'll get some fans as a result. Yeah.
There you go.
Jeremy, I want to ask you about the difference between improv and stand-up, because there are a lot of differences, but the training, I'm sure, helps. Have you found it to be intimidating to transition to stand-up, and do you get nervous before your sets?
I get it is completely intimidating, and yes, I do get nervous. It's interesting, as an actor, I haven't had those nerves in a long time, just because I've been doing it for so long and navigating through that, and it's just been very comfortable. And then the first time I got up as a stand-up, I'll never forget it. Laugh Factory said, would you do a benefit for underprivileged kids to get some toys for them? I said, sure. Why don't you host with Russell Peters, who's probably one of the best at crowd work in the game?
He's top notch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm standing up there with Russell, and I knew, see, the one thing about myself is I do understand my limitations, and I think it's one thing that it's a good quality to have. So I knew, my God, okay, this guy works the crowd and has been doing it for a long time. I need to prepare some bits. So I have them in my back pocket. So I prepared some bits, and they actually worked. And you know that that's the magic, and that's what hooks you, and that's what makes the form addictive.
There is nothing like it. And you talk about that moment when you are walking on stage and you're holding a microphone.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was at this school, there are a couple thousand people there. And I take a pause, and the room's quiet. It's like, oh, my God, they're listening to everything I'm saying. I'm leading them through this thing.
Yeah.
It's nothing like it.
Nothing like it. And the idea that you can think something is funny and then share it with a group of people, and they do as well. There's something magical about that. And so that's the moment that happened. So that's how I got hooked on it. Now, the improv comes in when they call it writing on your feet on stage, and it can happen at any moment. You do that, you know, when you're working the crowd and all that kind of stuff. But also you're exploring bits. But that's the high wire act about it, because you need to always be going somewhere, leading to some point, to a button, to a payoff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you hear Chappelle, and, you know, I've become friends with him, and he's one of these guys where he can be a mentor to anyone because he's just such a decent person and the best in the game. But he, you know, I asked him if he got nervous, and he said that he doesn't because he knows how to land the plane. So no matter what, he's going to bring you home safely. So he can deviate and just go off on a tangent, but he knows how to wrap it all up.
He's just seamless.
Yeah.
He will take multiple concepts, and yeah. you will not even know it, and they all yeah. converge gingerly at the end, and it's like... You know, but that's a guy who is just at the top of his craft. Well, it's cool, man. It's cool that you're engaged with this and finding yeah. it to be a the next step in something that you're doing career-wise.
Well, it's the one arena that I've never done and was always very intimidated by it, but always was a huge fan of it. I remember the first time I saw Chappelle at the Comedy Cellar. He looks out and he goes, "Snap! Jeremy Piven!" He's like, "What's the five fingers say to the face? Slap!" No, he's
pretty good.
He's the Richard Pryor of our generation.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, people don't know that I do impressions.
Yeah.
You know, and I do, it's funny because like I've that's the great thing about this act, and people say to me, "Man, look, you've actually been around these people, so it's not like you're doing impressions and the audience may be going, does he actually know Stallone?" Right. I was on a plane, I went up to him and I said, "Hey man, I just got to tell you, I'm just a huge fan of yours, and you know, who wasn't influenced by Rocky?"
Yeah.
And you know, he said, "Thanks very much, you know." We were just talking about the fact that, you know, and he's just off and running. Like, yeah. You guys remember I remember seeing Rocky for the first time, and you know, he had that great classic line, you know, "You want to have a good time, you need a good watch." Which is like one of the worst jokes ever. Uh-huh. But it's a classic.
Yeah. We are one of the greatest experiences we had here. We've been trying to, listen, Stallone, for Christ's sake, we've been working that hardcore. But we got Philly. Carl Weathers in here.
Oh, my God.
And it was just freaking awesome because that movie is listen, if you don't like Rocky, I don't know what to say to you because...
So Stallone's never been in, is what you're saying.
No.
How is that possible?
Well, Frank Stallone.
Tell us about it.
Frank Stallone.
Yeah.
In fact, so, yes, we couldn't get Frank to leave.
Well, we wanted Beyonce, but we got Solange.
You know? Yes! Yeah, yeah.
She was available.
No, you're exactly
you have my
right.
brother on, but you didn't have me.
I picked him up and drove him here.
Frank?
Yeah. Frank, yeah.
Frank, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then we had a buffet in the studio, and he wouldn't leave. He just kept eating the whole
he
time.
He ate like he had a tapeworm. Yeah. It was an amazing...
God bless Frank Stallone.
Yeah, yeah, Frank Stallone.
I'm freaking out because this interview is kind of blowing my mind. Everything that you've talked about in what you bring to the stage and what you bring to the screen, I'm just like relaying to characters. And you were saying, like, you know, put it all out there. The character is ageless. You don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
And the backstory, and it's just like, it's Draws from PCU. And I'm just like flashing. Everything you're saying is like, you yeah. could go do PCU right now, and it's that timeless because yeah. it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you're right.
Could you, though? Could you? PCU was a very fun and now seems incredibly prescient. Huh. Because it's gotten that much exponentially ooh. More tight-ass. Colleges yeah. used to be for stand-ups, used to be safe haven. Man, they got it. This is where you can go and you can have that sort of discussion. And now, man, you can't. And PCU was railing on that years ago.
Yeah, it was before its time. It really was. And yeah, we've gotten to the point now where it's fascinating what's happening. But the good news about that is that, you know, power to the people.
Yeah.
And we all have a voice. And you know, we're living in a town where, you know, they celebrate the Declaration of Independence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we need to, as Chappelle said to me, you know, we need to embrace our freedom of speech. And stand-up is one of the last arenas where we can really utilize that freedom
it's
of speech.
True. It's true.
You know, so we've got to use it. We got to, you know, it's a great platform.
And that performance, you've got several this weekend. So
tomorrow and Saturday, 7:30 and 9:45. And then the Sunday show, which is the benefit, at 8 o'clock. So get out to any of these shows. If you need the details, you want the ticket information, you can go to punchlinephilly.com. So you're going to be in town for the weekend. It's cool. Hopefully you take in the city a little bit while you're here.
I'm here. I'm hanging out. Any suggestions, go to for restaurants or whatever, you know, you just at Jeremy Piven on Twitter and
Marissa's the person you want to talk to.
Okay. Show me the restaurant info.
I'll put you in the best directions.
There you go. Instagram at Jeremy Piven. I have a little blue check.
So you're also you're really interactive on Instagram. I was paying attention this week and promoting the shows at Punchline, and you were inviting people out. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I run it myself. You know, I spell everything wrong. So you know it's me. I'm a caveman. It's a great way to interact with people and let people know. And when they come to Punchline, we'll hang out afterwards and take pictures and all that kind of stuff. And
that's cool.
You know, it's like you get about 300 people in a room, and it's intimate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's a lot of fun. We're gonna have a great time.
It's good to have you here, man.
That's good to be
enjoy
here.
The city. Yeah.
Oh, I'm not leaving. I'm gonna go for the Frank Stallone all you can eat.
We'll set you up, man.
Thank you guys so much, man. I appreciate it.
We love it. Excellent. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeremy Piven.
Yeah! Thank you.
Punchline Philly this weekend.
Come on out.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Our buddy Frank Caliendo in next. Stay there.
This 93.3 WMMR audio on demand program returns after a brief word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Preston. Grilling season is here, and they have done it again at Omaha Steaks. This is the one and only deal that you can get. It is the Omaha Steaks Grill Ready Collection, a limited time for only $39.99. You heard that right. $39.99 is 80% off, and here's what you get. Two tender filet mignons, two beefy top sirloins, four juicy boneless pork chops, four boneless chicken breasts, four all-beef Omaha Steak burgers, four traditional kielbasa sausages, four award-winning gourmet jumbo franks, an Omaha Steak seasoning packet, and for this deal, you get four made-from-scratch caramel apple tartlets for free. Did you hear all of that? You get, it's for $39.99. And what's wonderful about this is you're not going to have to stop off at the store on the way home. It's already going to be there ready to go. This limited time package for only $39.99 is available when you go to omahasteaks.com, type Gadzooks in the search bar, and add the Grill Ready Collection to your cart. Don't wait. You want to get this offer soon for summertime. Go to omahasteaks.com, type Gadzooks in the search bar, grab your friends, and fire up the grill.
Are you ready for love? If so, Stephen makes it easy, handpicking diamonds to create a stunning engagement ring that's guaranteed to take her breath away. Stephen Singer Jewelers, real love experts at the other corner of 8th and Walnut, or IHateStephenSinger.com.
Hey, it's Preston. Listen, when I want to relax, I go to Hand & Stone Massage Facial Spa. Listen, whether you want a rejuvenating massage or refreshing facial, Hand & Stone is the place to go. Introductory massages or facials start at just $59.95. Visit handandstone.com or one of their 50 locations in the Delaware Valley. Restrictions apply. See spa for details.
This is the Preston & Steve Show podcast.
Our next guest is back in town. It's always a wonderful thing when this happens. And he, not unlike our last guest, is also going to be at Punchline Philly. He'll be there tonight at 7:30. It's going to be a damn good evening because it always is when Frank Caliendo is in town.
Yes. I'll tell you what. I was so intrigued by Jeremy Piven. I was like, because I remember when I was, I guess maybe in college, I wanted to be him.
Yes.
That was one of those things is I'm like, oh, that guy, I could be that kind of guy. And I didn't realize how hard it was to be that kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
But we were just sitting out there talking a little bit, and it was incredible. It was just amazing. I mean, he's coming from so he's working on stand-up from the actor's point of view.
He's coming from that side, from the improvisational side. And you know, and I understand Joe Rogan's reaction to it, Frank, you know, saying, oh, an actor, blah, 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 blah. But you know, Jeremy's made it clear he appreciates the craft, and
yeah,
he's not
really
going to.
But he's got the ability to tell the story, and he's got the working the stuff in. See, I'm coming from the opposite side. I've been known as doing all these impressions. This is what I was talking to him out there. He threw out that Chappelle, which was great.
Yeah,
and you work that stuff in. I'm the guy who does the impressions. That's how people think of me all the time.
Right,
and it to the point where.
people don't even understand that I can do other stuff. So they'll be like, I was on the radio with a friend of mine in Cleveland, and he's like, so you working on a Tony Romo? I'm like, no, I'm not working on any new impression. What about a Jim Nance? No, I'm not working on Jim Nance. I'm working on talking about stories about, like, my son and stuff like that.
He's
like, does your son sound like Tony Romo? No, my son sounds nothing like Tony Romo. Stop it!
Well, has that led you to want to, and I know it probably wouldn't because you understand that it is what it is and people come to expect certain things from your act. But I remember, like, when Eddie Murphy started to break really big outside of SNL and his stand-up specials came out, the movies and so forth, and he flat out goes, if you came here to see Gumby or Buckwheat or stuff, you ain't getting it tonight.
Well, see, here's the thing. I'm coming from a spot where people are paying money to see this stuff. So they get some of their best of kind of stuff that they want to see. And if I haven't gotten to those impressions, I do impressions.
Yeah.
And it's a lot about, like, the stuff Jeremy was talking about. We're on a first name basis as long as he's in a different room.
Hey, so are we now.
Mr.
Yeah.
P. So
he's left the building.
Yeah, babe.
So he was talking about, like, it's when you know the people, when you actually have interacted with the people, I found people are getting more of a sense of me from telling those stories. I'm sure I've told you the story about meeting Barkley last time.
Yeah. He's like, you got to keep doing me. Why is that? Because every time you do it, I end up making more money.
And Barkley has that honesty. So that's where that's even where I'm coming from, is the honesty. And the honesty that Mr. P had there, that I'm trying to not sound like a dork, just going, Jeremy. So when that honesty that comes to it, that's what acting is all about, really. Anybody who's ever, I didn't know that in acting. Like, I always thought you went out and put on a performance. Then I took acting classes. I'm like, I'm going about this completely wrong. Acting is truth. It's coming and finding that truth. Charles Barkley tells the truth. They put him on CNN to talk about, what do you think about what's going on in Syria?
Well, I think it's a really bad situation. They're like, did you do any research? Not at all. Like, I was just downstairs doing the basketball show and you guys called me to come up.
And then, like, with the Draymond Green thing, like a couple months ago, the Western Conference Finals, he said, Charles Barkley, talking about a player on the Golden State Warriors, I've never heard this in a game, goes, I want to punch Draymond Green in the face. I cleaned that up. I think I could probably say,
I want to punch Draymond Green's ass in the face.
That's what he said. And, like, is that even anatomically possible? What is that punch, right? Yeah. So then his apology was what I really loved, because it was honesty coming from truth. It was Charles Barkley. You know, they made him apologize. He didn't want to apologize, but he did it with something he could live with. And his apology was basically, I apologize for recognizing that Draymond Green has such a punchable face. That is not an apology. But that's, he could live with it. And he's honest and true to himself.
Yeah.
I felt bad about interrupting the conversation because we had to get you in here, but you and Piven were having a really open and honest conversation about your different crafts.
Because I admire the stuff he's done. I mean, he's what I wanted to be.
But he was just as interested in your perspective on comedy because he is a student of stand-up.
And, well, but a lot of people might not even see me as a stand-up because I see myself... But
we've talked about this over the years. There are many impressionists who just simply get the voice. If there's no material, it's inert. It just lays there. It's a phonic display and nothing more. You write material that's funny.
Right. I'm finding how to do that with people in my life. That's the thing.
People are accepting clearly. You're working more than ever.
But it's amazing because it's like crazy. The whole idea of this club tour was to go into these little venues, not do bigger venues, and go in and try this stuff because I didn't know where it was going to go. So I've just been taking from truth in life. Like my daughter, who's just turned 12, she's awesome. But my son, who's about to turn 14, I haven't seen him for 2 weeks because he plays a video game called Fortnite.
We were talking about Preston's as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. That video game is so addictive. If you talked about it, I'm trying to get him hooked on heroin just to get him out of his room. He'll meet new people, learn about commerce, precision with a needle. He could be a doctor at that point.
Right.
But he came out of his room the other day. The bunker, he's like, what's that? I'm like, daylight. That's what that is. And he's like, where's my sandwich? I'm like, I didn't know you ordered one. What are you talking? Then I watch the game and you go into a room and you find loot and you take it.
Yeah.
It was all that coming into plays. I hear him in his room and he's like, no,
going left to right, left to right. I'm like, you okay? He's like, Dad, my friends, they can hear you. I'm sorry, I'm so stupid.
Like, I didn't know. Like, when their friends come over. They don't come over anymore. Like, you'll talk about, hey, what'd you do today? I was hanging out with Evan. Oh, was he here? No, Dad, on the game. Well, like, that's not hanging out. That's like essentially like talking on the phone.
But it's yeah. funny how even that has changed. So years ago in video games, you would have what they call LAN games. You would have everyone would bring over their Xbox or whatever game they were playing. And this is just a few years ago. And you were in the same room playing games that were linked together, game consoles that are linked together. Now you're online. And you're exactly right. It is removed. And on the Fortnite level, I mean, it's a whole level of addiction. Yeah. As a parent, Preston was talking about it. It's got to freak you out.
It's trying to get.
I think I spent forever in my room by myself, doing stuff.
But like we were playing Zelda and stuff like that. I was talking to my son. I was watching the game some. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, that's a Fortnite dance. You taunt somebody with
it.
Yes.
And you have to buy that.
Yeah, right. You have to pay for the dances and pay for the skins, which sounds worse than it is.
Well, they keep getting you. Add-ons.
Oh, yeah, because it was free. They gave it away.
Right.
And they just gave it away and gave you little pieces of it. But that whole thing, I was just blown away. So, when we were kids, probably when I was in high school, Mortal Kombat came out. You'd grab somebody, finishing move. You'd grab their spine and pull it out, which was really healthy for us as kids. But now it's not even that. You're taunting during the game, and I'm worried that's going to start happening.
Yeah.
Like that people are going to, some of these kids are going to be joining our armed forces. They're going to go overseas and they're going to start doing the floss. Like, oh man, our army's gone way down. Wonder what that tracks back to. Fortnite is what it tracks back
right,
to.
Right, right.
I actually had to pull my son aside because I heard the way he was talking to his friends while, they were all connected. I go, dude, you're kind of being a dick, dude.
But they all, they say terrible things all swear. And I'm like, man, you got to be careful. Yeah. Dude, because
I was on this years ago when I first started getting into it. It sounded like 9-year-olds ripping some adult men in Australia apart. I'm just sitting there listening. I mean, the language was over the top.
Right.
It's chilling, and it's also humorous at the same
time. Right,
it is,
because like, oh, my kid's pretty cool, man. Yeah. At the same time, I'm going, I wonder who else can hear him. Because you go to somebody else's house, and they've got it on speaker. They don't have the Xbox headset
on. They're going through the stereo or something. Yeah.
And, he can't talk to another human being. That's the thing is, my daughter can talk to anyone, and she can give a dissertation. It's unbelievable. My son, he doesn't talk to people.
Interpersonal skills.
Doesn't look him in the eye, but you put the Xbox headset on, he's General Patton. He's like, we will find a 2x2 formation. You will be ready to go. Right. You're the general from Army Men in Toy Story. What? How is this transformation happening?
Yeah, there you go, the Patton theme. So you have the kids. And you're doing the new material, and how long is this tour that you're doing?
Just to the end of summer.
Are you building to a special?
I don't know. Yes and no. I mean, I was just trying to find a different thing. I'm just trying to, like, for me, whenever I wanted to write a new bit,
it would be
based around an impression because I felt that's what I had to do. That's what worked.
Does it become an albatross at a point?
I mean, I'm completely pigeonholed. At that point, that where I want to be. I want to do other stuff, and this is the only way to do it. Because I was telling Jeremy, I was telling JP, Dennis Miller,
I mean, it's unbelievable what he did. Takes the sunglasses off. He's a regular human being, man.
That's a spot on Dennis Miller.
I mean, that's Dennis Miller laughing at his own stuff.
That's like Gangnam Khashoggi waiting in line for the Matterhorn at Disney World.
So, I don't know where I was going.
We were talking to JP.
JPiv.
The Pivster?
I don't remember where I was. I lost. I just want a lot of love for this. the difficulty in even coming up with that word. I left Cleveland at 4:15 in the morning to be here. That's how much I care about selling the last few tickets. And then I hear you guys got a belly flop contest, and I'm like, well, their whole audience is going to go to the back. Oh, can belly flop too? Jeremy Piven might come and watch the show and belly flop.
As popular as it is, there'll be those who can't make it, and you'll have more than enough people come over. There are many Frank Caliendo fans in the area.
A tremendous amount.
By the way, I love the Trump as a priest. You were doing Trump forever.
Yeah.
And I remember prior to the election saying, you know, listen, Rich Little did, you know, Nixon and all these. When you're an impressionist, and so in your case, you're sort of, you're not turning your back on the impressionists, but you're trying to incorporate material.
Well, I tell a story about doing a sketch with them years ago, which was the weirdest thing in the world. Because it stopped down. And it went to the director says, you know, cut. And he's like, is this okay? Is this all right? Does this seem okay? And everybody around the room was like, yes, Mr. Trump. Yes, Mr. Trump. I was like, wait. Does anybody ever tell you something isn't good? He goes, no, and that's part of the problem. I can't get real answers. I was like, oh, and I'm not advocating for Trump, against Trump, whatever. You take your own thing. If you're listening to me for politics, you got a problem. But He was two people. He was the person off camera and the person on camera. And in those terms, that was what kind of scared me, because he was these two different people.
But you do that subtlety, that aside stuff that no one else who people who lay claim to doing a Trump impression don't do. There are nuanced elements of any impression that you always drill down and get.
Yeah, I try to find it and make it the character, as opposed to doing the dead-on voice.
You have Trump as a priest, which is...
Yeah, Trump is a... Say our ten... What was it? Say our...
Ten
Trump,
our fathers?
Our Trump, no, it was ten Trump fathers and ten. Three A.O. Melanias or something like that. But it was like somebody comes over and is like, I'm having trouble with my neighbor. In our properties, there's a wall and he wants me to pay for it. And he's like, wait a second. There's a wall being built between you. You make him pay for it.
But you know what? There was a time when a lot of comedy albums and things were who was the comedian who did all the Kennedy stuff?
Vaughn
Meader. So this is years ago. And that was, everybody had a chuckle, blah, blah, blah. It's a much different mentality now. Unless you're going to go hard way one way, you're not able to get away with a lot of political humor now, because everyone's so hyperbolic.
Yeah, I think, listen, my audience is all over.
Yeah.
And I'm a middle-of-the-road kind of person anyways, but my audience is all over the place, and I just, again, I don't feel like I think other people, that's great that they feel that need, and that's what they do, and they do have those convictions, and they're great at it, that they go for that. But I love to listen. I love to listen to other people's perspectives on stuff, because we all grow up differently and things are different. Another reason, politics is a difficult thing, but another reason getting away from a lot of the impressions is because all my heroes are getting in trouble. Bill Cosby, 10 years ago, was the safest guy in the world to talk about.
He was lamely benign. Either people appreciated what he meant to stand-up comedy and that he was one of the greatest of all time. Who could have ever have seen?
Right?
Who could have ever seen
but
this
now
happen?
You bring it, if I told you Donald Trump was going to be president 10 years ago, and Vice President Hogan, let me tell you something, brother. Like, that's really going to happen.
Right.
So, but you look at Kevin Spacey, one of my favorite actors of all time. I'm watching, I'm going, no. And then Morgan Freeman, which one of the biggest things I've ever done is the Morgan Freeman stuff. I probably told you this bit before. I used to do it in my act, where he played God in all these movies.
Yeah.
And these hashtag things come out about him. And that's the difficult thing, is you have to believe victims. But at the same time, people need...
You can't get convicted in
social media. It's very, you never get the whole story. Like I said, you have to believe people on each side of it, especially victims. We're trying people in public and never giving them the chance to talk.
What happens is the negative or incendiary tweet blows around the world nine times over. The recanting of that, or the, we got it wrong tweet,
Nobody even cares.
Yeah.
But even Morgan Freeman played God And all, and this is the bit I used to do. Morgan Freeman played God and Bruce Almighty and other. And anytime he showed up, Morgan Freeman did, or anytime there was a place, a part for a God, you're like, I hope it's Morgan Freeman playing God.
Yeah.
To the point where when he died, that you think that'd be stressful. And he dies up in heaven, like, well, God, how do you think I did? And God looked back at him. I thought you did pretty well. But now it'd be like, well, how do you think I did? Well, in the movies, you were pretty good, but there are some things we need to talk about. And this might not be heaven. That's where you're looking at going, oh, and people, and then from there on, I've hit kind of both sides of that, mm-hmm. and then I can talk about that a little bit in the show.
We stay away from the politics because it's going to be polarizing. You can't win, and B, you're talking about an incendiary time we live in. For Christ's sake, if people forget, Preston, John Lasseter, the Toy Story, the animator, beloved Disney. He had his thing, his scandal. It's just crazy.
And that's all this stuff. And it's even for me, that's difficult. When you go and talk about your family, it's a little bit easier because when a president isn't president anymore, it's old.
It's old
news. It's
not relevant. I've heard you say that, but I still find it to be funny.
It is, but I hit the Bush stuff for a second.
I still love your George Bush stuff.
Well, because
it's mainly your face. Though.
It's categorically the most accurate.
Magnificente, as they say in Espanolish.
And the head bob,
he's a human Muppet, right? He laughs like Statler and Waldorf on the Muppets. Why do we always come here? I guess I'll never know. It's like some kind of torture to have to watch a show. So it's that. I mean, that stuff.
Yeah.
And that's really the show that I do actually builds to that point. But I started out even talking about when I was trying to change the material and go a different way. I was even trying to find things that made some of those impressions more relevant. Like when you're a president, I haven't even gotten to these bits on stage recently because the new stuff has been just taking over. But the like George W. Bush, when a former president, they don't care anymore. They don't have any gotcha questions. You can't be made in the news by talking to a former president. Yeah. So they ask him stuff like, what have you been doing since you've been president? His honesty is like, I can't tell if he's messing with him. He's just honest. He's like, I'm not really sure. I guess I've been working on my Facebook page. I've been tweeting, playing some Pokemon Go. I just found a Squirtle. And I got two shinies, man. I threw some pineapples. So it's that stuff, but that still wasn't coming from the truth that I'm trying to come through, come through now. But even that stuff, I mean, it's different. For me, even going up there and not doing the show that I'd done forever and just adding a single line here and there, that was hard at the beginning.
Let me tell you, mentioning to Jeremy.
JP.
That I'd done stand-up for a while. but the truth of the matter is that the people who really do it and do it well meticulously add bit by bit by bit, and I am probably more on an improvisational level. I would always do crowd work. I'd always do stuff that because I have like an ADD type of drive that I can't.
You can find other stuff too.
You can find other stuff.
You go out to the audience and they'll say something and it'll spark something
in
your mind that goes in a different direction. It was odd because I did the Fortnite stuff last night in Cleveland.
Yeah.
It was actually pancreatic cancer. 100% went to pancreatic because my father-in-law just passed away.
Oh my God.
Yeah. My father-in-law
Sorry
passed
to hear
away
about
from
that.
Yeah. This is a weird thing and I'm not trying to make light of this. This is just honesty again. But everybody in my wife's family seems to die on somebody else's birthday. So my father-in-law died on my son's birthday on the 26th, named after him, died on his birthday. And this is the crazy thing because his name, Papa Joe Vitale.
Yeah.
So he loved everything the stuff I would do on stage. He would always do his John Madden. He would just do that. So my wife, we wakes up in the middle of the night and is like, my dad just died. I'm like, okay, God, all right. What do you need to talk about? What's that? So it was very difficult. But then she's like, we're going to do everything that we had planned to do because this is what we had planned on my son's birthday. Russell Wilson had asked me to do a charity for cancer research and stuff like that in Seattle. So we went and did that, and it was part of it was the reason I won't work on my kids' birthdays, but he offered to play catch with my son. So
Russell Wilson
played catch with my son on his birthday, or the day after. Then we flew to Cleveland for the funeral. And I was like, hon, you can stay here. I have another cancer thing I have to go to. This cancer is just brutal. It's everywhere.
Yeah, so yeah.
So she's like, I can leave you guys all here. She's like, no, because my dad, I'll tell you why. We went down to Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And I did a cancer research thing there in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Anybody know who's from Kiln? Yeah. Kiln, which is right next to Hattiesburg, Mississippi?
No.
Brett Favre.
Well, okay.
So that night after the funeral, Brett Favre is at the show.
Wow.
And talking, and because my father-in-law always used to go, Brett Favre. That would be the thing he'd always do. And it was just these moments, and my son's meeting these NFL future and Hall of Famers and, at the time, and you're looking and going, geez, all this stuff is happening at one time. Birthday, father, grandpa passes away, meeting these famous people that my son idolized. So, I mean, it was like almost like to lift us up and bring us in this new thing. It was a really crazy, difficult time, but more of that stuff where I just found, wow, this humanity, this element, this is...
And
it's making me more of a human being, which I always wondered if I was even part of the species.
Because
I'm like, gosh, I'm just so, you know, I'm just a brick wall.
We've all gone through that. You have a moment where you're like, am I even, you know, but and not to get too introspective and everything, that's a tough patch, and then you have these wonderful things happening at the same time.
Yeah, it was just really, it was really odd, and it made me start thinking about a lot of different things.
Is that what spurred you on to do a sort of a to introduce the new material?
Not at all. I think it was a piece of it. Yeah, I think there's a lot of little things for me that all converged to bring me to doing what I'm doing now. I was getting tired of being the guy who just. I don't think I explained. I was telling this to J-Piv.
So dumb.
We need to count the number of references.
Yeah. But it's really, I can't remember what I talked about here and what I was euphorically talking about with him out there.
See, but the cool part is, and the downer is that you're dropping the name of someone that we had just talked to.
Right. So a lot of what he was saying, I was like, oh, yeah. I was like learning. Oh, that's where you're coming from on that. That's interesting to hear that perspective, because it's some of it was the same, some of it was like the opposite way.
Yeah, yeah.
But did I talk about this? Like doing impressions is like being a magician.
Mm-mm.
Because I haven't talked about that.
No.
So when people come to see you and they go to see a magician, they're waiting for the next magic trick. What's the next trick?
Yeah.
What's the next trick?
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're Penn and Teller.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like a David Copperfield.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Penn and Teller, people are going, what are they going to talk about around the trick? How are you going to break the trick down?
True.
Who are they going to be? Then you're going to see Penn and Teller. You're not going to see a magician. So what I want to be is the Penn and Teller of impressions. But that's really what you're saying. But it
I
is,
totally
yeah,
because it.
It's not like, what's next? What's next? Oh, and that's what I was telling J-Pip about, was that I'll go into an audition room, and they're like, you're the guy who does the impressions. They'll rewrite a scene. Like Steve Byrne did it, put me on a show. I did a spot on a Disney Channel show. They rewrite everything for me to do impressions. And I'm like, no, I want to be just a character on your show.
Well, look, you're talking to us. Yeah.
Just the impression guy.
Right.
Or you're just brought into a room to entertain the people in the room, and you're never going to get the part. They're like, now do some of that. Do some of that Robert Downey Jr. I believe I could have done that the entire time. We could have gotten him to come in here himself. Okay? Very much appreciate it. # gotta go.
All right, well, listen, we have to take a break. But, Frank, you're going to hang out for a bit,
I can hang out.
Outstanding.
I mean, excellent. You flew in, for Christ's sake.
Right? I was thinking if you guys are going to go to commercial, I only got one punchline reference in so far.
I'll make sure I mention that a number of times. Punchline tonight, by the way, is Frank's show at 7:30. You can go to punchlinephilly.com and get tickets to the Penn and Teller of Impressions. We'll be on stage. No, but Frank's going to hang out for a bit, and we're going to do the Bizarre File and a few other things as well. We're happy to have him here. We'll be back in just a second. Make sure that you stay with us.
This summer, surprise! The MMR
Tommy is hitting house parties throughout the Delaware Valley, delivering our summer house party pack. Got a backyard barbecue, pool party, summer shindig? No matter what the party, we're going to help you get it started right. With food from Philly's own Dietz and Watson, premium meats and artisan cheeses, a case of Bud Light Lime or Bud Light Orange, and backyard party games courtesy of Jeff D'Ambrosio Auto Group. Hit up the contest page at WMMR.com to register your party to win MMR's Summer House Party Pack from 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks your summer.
6 minutes.
Can you jam in a bizarre file that'll rock us?
I can, and but
or are we being deprived?
Not with me here.
No, not with Frank.
No, absolutely.
So, let's do the bizarre file, and our buddy Frank Caliendo hanging out this morning. We'll make sure that we mention the show many, many times at Punchline Philly tonight. Many, many times.
Yeah!
At 7:30. You can go to punchlinephilly.com. All right, let's do the bizarre file now.
Now, bizarre. WMMR presents bizarre. Kristen and Steve's bizarre file.
All right, we'll do a couple of stories here, and then we'll spend some time talking to Frank. It's brought to you by Robbins Diamonds in Tax-Free Delaware, with thousands of rings and self-serve cases and absolutely no sales tax versus the 8% tax in Philly. Robbins Delaware Diamonds. I don't know why I love this story, but when the tomatoes began disappearing, a family in Montreal assumed that it was the work of a squirrel. But when they checked their security camera, they actually saw the tomato thief was their mailman.
Oh, no way.
And now they want an apology.
What's that on your lower lip there, Bill?
So Rob Morin.
Is that ketchup? That's not ketchup, is it?
Rob Morin told CNN that he and his wife regularly grow fruit in hanging baskets outside their home, and they decided to do some tomatoes. He said, this year, after many were ripe, we noticed that they were going missing. We first thought it was the squirrels, but normally the squirrels leave a mess, and there was not a mess on the ground where the plants were.
Yeah, that's not indicative of a squirrel.
They said, for fun, we checked our security cameras and spotted on many occasions our postman helping himself to our tomatoes and strawberries.
Son of a bitch.
But what's really crazy is that squirrel delivered the mail for a week.
That's right. The Canada Post are aware of the case, and they have spoken with the family about it.
Stop doing that, eh?
Morin's wife, Paula, has said that her family doesn't want the mailman fired, which is typical Canadian. If he were American, they'd want his job.
Oh, no, let him keep delivering.
Yeah.
He's doing a great job. He gets us the mail. We're just missing tomatoes.
They said they don't want the mailman fired, but they would like some sort of apology.
Straight to hell.
She said if he replaces the plants or offers the family a strawberry pie or some tomato sauce, all will be forgiven. So they're willing to let bygones be bygones. Linda Michaels was on vacation when her home security system alerted her to something in her backyard. And what she saw.
Who's effing with my tomatoes?
No, what she saw in a remote camera earlier this month showed an interaction between two forces of nature. And the battle wasn't exactly life or death. Michael says that bears wander into their yard sometimes, and they have safely chased them off before. This time, however, the bear, which appeared to be about 3 or 4 years old and sporting a tag, wandered over to the small pool and saw an inflatable shark, and the bear started to fight the shark.
That's
in
great.
The backyard.
That's great.
But when the shark moved, the bear was startled and retreated about 10 feet away. This is the only time in history there's been a bear-shark encounter, I would imagine. Then it slowly approached the shark again. Michael says that they were careful not to leave the items in the yard.
It's okay, it's fake.
That would attract bears, but their land is next to a protected wooded area.
Those bear claws, so it's an inflatable pool. Surprised you didn't puncture that bastard.
Yep. And then we'll do...
We know how to battle a bear, though, right?
Yeah.
Throw a flop.
Shark. Yeah, flop. Yeah.
All right, we'll do one more quick story, and then we'll wrap up the B-File. A woman accused of setting two hay bale fires, causing more than $20,000 in Half Moon Bay, California, said that she set the blazes to prevent a zombie apocalypse and a cult massacre, respectively.
Well, she's a hero, then.
Deputies arrested Monica Louise Berlin following a 20-mile chase, during which she live-streamed part of the pursuit on Facebook as well. She's accused of burning 900 bales of hay worth about $10,800 on June 26th, and then another 865 bales of hay worth about $9,000 in the same field.
Well, let me
on
ask
July
you something.
3rd.
Did you read anything about a zombie holocaust?
You know what? There was no zombie activity, so
I think it worked.
She might have been successful. Berlin told firefighters at the first blaze this was about the zombie apocalypse. At the second fire, she told them that she had burned the hay to prevent a cult from committing a massacre.
Is it possible she simply is an arsonist?
It's possible. Berlin pleaded not guilty, though, to arson and evading arrest. Police stayed busy Friday night responding. This is a different story. Never mind.
And in a related story.
I accidentally stapled it to that story.
Accidentally stapled that to the other story.
In a related story, police say that a seagull is a criminal in Gloucester. A man was walking down Main Street near the waterfront around 9 p.m. when a seagull swooped down and stole his wallet from him. Mayor Steftati Romeo said in a Facebook message, before the man knew it, the seagull had flown down to the wallet and took it up onto the roof of a nearby building.
So where was it? Was it in his pants pocket? Was he holding it? Was it on his head? How did the bird gain access?
No details as of now about that. So they just know that the bird stole it. All right, and there you go. That's what I got in the bizarre file for you.
You got it in.
I did. Case went. Do we need a break now?
We do. We come back.
Right, we'll come back. Frank Caliendo will spend some more time with us. We'll return in a second. I want to give something away as we're taking
you
a
know
break.
What? Let's do it. Do,
you give me whatever you got, and I'll give something away.
Yes.
All right. Yes. All right. A 4-pack of tickets to see Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban in concert at The Man on July 26th. So the Philadelphia Orchestra is performing the score from the film while the movie plays in high definition on the 40-foot screens. Really cool. So they handle it live.
Yes.
There. So we'll take caller number 8 at 215-263-WMMR. Tickets are on sale now via Ticketmaster.com or at the Man box office. Frank Caliendo in our studio, Punchline Philly, tonight at 7:30. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Preston and Steve Show on 93.3 WMMR. Like the podcast, you'll also love it live when you can call in. Weekdays from 6 a.m. to about 10:30 a.m. on the radio at 93.3 WMMR. Or stream the show live via MMR's mobile app.
All right, so I'm going to do today's lesson question, and we are going to give away a pair of 3-day Go Everywhere passes. This is for the Exponential Music Festival, which is coming up the 27th through the 29th. And I haven't even looked at these. Okay, here we go. In the UK, they're going to get rid of plastic tampons and will be replaced by what?
It's true.
215-263-WMMR. They're not getting rid of the plastic tampons. They're getting rid of the plastics in tampons, the applicators.
Oh, yeah.
Plastic tampon wouldn't work so
well.
No. But what are they going to be replaced with? 215-263-WMMR. If you know the answer, call now. While you're calling, we'll do the trash, and then we'll get your answer. Here we go.
The trash business is a gold mine.
93.3 WMMR with Preston and Steve's Hollywood Trash.
Brought to you this morning by Dunkin' Donuts. Fuel your summer with iced coffee from Dunkin' Donuts starting at $2. And America runs on Dunkin'. Excludes cold brew plus applicable taxes. Participation may vary. Limited time offer. What's going on this morning, Steve?
Well, Matthew Broderick vigorously denying a weird rumor that he's leaving wife Sarah Jessica Parker for the male co-star of an off-Broadway comedy he's starring in. Said Broderick, quote, "Sorry to disappoint the rumor mill, but I've got quite a pretty little filly at home." No, seriously. Dude. She has the long equine face of an actual horse.
She does.
There you go. And speaking of denials, Drake refuting a claim on the gossip site Media Takeout, claiming he's involved with Black China. Drake says he does think China's attractive, but would not go anywhere near her until she sandblasts the Rob Kardashian out of her vagina.
Oh my God.
And finally, Jude Law playfully hinting that despite assertions to the contrary, his younger version of Dumbledore's sexuality will be explored in the Fantastic Beasts, The Crime of Grindelwald. Law hints that astute Potter fans might catch a reference to his homosexuality during a 22-minute orgy scene in a gay bathhouse. And that's your Hollywood Trash.
All righty. We'll see if somebody knows the answer to this. In the UK, they're going to get rid of the plastics in tampons, and they will be replaced by what? 215-263-WMMR. You had to have heard it earlier this morning. I'm going to go to Alex. Hey, Alex, how you doing?
Hey, how are you, man?
Good. Alex, you know the answer?
Yes, it is chocolate tampons.
Chocolate. We did mention that, didn't we?
Now, you can figure your level of generosity on this, Preston.
Mm.
on this day.
You know what? Yeah, there were a couple of answers, and that was
it's
one
the birthday of,
them. Of
Campbell Scott.
I'm going to go with that, Alex. Yeah, you're correct. Yes, it was. The answer that we were going for was wood.
Yeah,
because that was the first one you said, and then, sure. then we talked about chocolate tampons. I apologize. So, Alex, you got it right. We are going to give you. We have a pair of three-day Go Anywhere passes for Exponential Music Festival presented by Subaru, July 27th through the 29th. Camden Waterfront, 3 days, three stages, 30-plus performers, featuring an eclectic lineup of artists, including David Byrne, War on Drugs, and many more. Tickets available at xpnfest.org or Ticketmaster. What are we listening to?
Talking Heads, man.
Talking Heads, man. This is at the end of Wall Street. What's
this
that?
Must be the place.
Yeah.
It's a great
it's song. Naive Melody. Parentheses. This must be the
this
place.
Is playing during that major firefight in Black Hawk Down.
Yeah. I thought I recognized him from something. All right, let's do a quick music news.
Now, Preston and Steve's music news on 93.3 WMMR.
And it's brought to you by Elmwood Park Zoo, where curiosity roams. Witness a jaguar on the prowl. Witness an otter at play.
An otter!
They're actually very cute.
I love them.
And hand feed a giant giraffe all in the same visit. Visit ElmwoodParkZoo.org to learn more.
I did feed a giraffe there.
It's great,
isn't
it?
It is so awesome.
Yep, we've done it as well.
Yes.
All right, just a couple of quick stories. The Struts, our good friends, are set to headline their own tour this fall. Tickets for the Body Talks tour go on sale this Friday. And opening acts on various dates include White Reaper, Spirit Animal, The Rex, and my favorite, Thunder Pussy.
Thunder Pussy.
That's the name of the band.
You know who's a big Thunder Pussy fan is Mike McCready of Pearl Jam.
Oh, yeah?
He's been backing them. Yeah, they're pretty hard rocking. And
Pearl Jam would make sense to fit with. Okay.
Yeah, Thunder Pussy.
Mm-hmm.
The tour will kick off on September 21st in Detroit and run through November 9th. They wrap in San Francisco, but they are going to be performing right here in Philadelphia on October 6th. And they're going to be playing the TLA. Spirit Animal, not Thunder Pussy, will be here. Anybody know what day of the week October 6th might be?
Saturday, I believe.
Ooh. Yeah. Go see that show. They are such a great band. They recently released their single Body Talks from their upcoming second LP. Earlier this year, Korn's Jonathan Davis released his first full-length solo album, Black Labyrinth, and now plans to talk about it. He, of course, played a lot of that material.
Yes, he did.
At the MMRBQ. On August 1st, he's going to be in Hollywood to discuss the album and his long career with Korn as he takes part in the Musicians Institute's Conservation Series. Past guests have included Black Sabbath's Tony Iommi and Rob Halford of Judas Priest. Tickets are free for students and alumni, and general public can get tickets on a first-come, first-served basis. I actually went to Musicians Institute and looked into going there.
Really?
Yeah.
What
yeah.
Stopped you from doing that?
I don't know. It just the likelihood of me getting an actual career was pretty slim. So,
okay.
And I didn't have the money to pay for it.
Well, that too.
And then, finally, Billy Joel welcomed Bruce Springsteen on stage last night at New York's Madison Square Garden for his record-breaking 100th career gig at the hallowed Manhattan venue. The Boss returned the favor for Billy, presenting him his Tony Award last month by joining Billy and his band for a pair of classics from 1975's Born to Run. First up was 10th Avenue Freeze Out, featuring Bruce at one point sitting on top of the piano man's Baby Grand, followed by the album's iconic title track, Born to Run.
Hey, dude, is your son here? Holy, it's you, Billy? Yeah. Jesus Christ.
With the Long Island and Jersey legends trading verses on both tunes. Prior to leaving, Bruce, Billy's label mate on Columbia Records for an astounding 45 years.
That's right.
Kissed him on the head as Billy went on to finish what was his 60th show in his current Garden residency.
Oh, Billy.
Don't ever kiss my head.
Sorry. I just kind of seem fraternal.
Don't you
disgusting.
Ever.
I'm sweating. Don't ever kiss it again. You don't know me that well.
Yesterday afternoon before the show, a special presentation and press conference was held in the lobby of Madison Square Garden, where Billy was saluted by his good friend and godfather to his two young daughters, Governor Andrew Cuomo. Cuomo declared a Billy Joel Day, and
Andrew Cuomo is godfather to Billy Joel's daughters?
Yeah, two young daughters.
What the hell?
And he unveiled a Steinway piano and a plaque that will sit in front of its main entrance off of Chase Square.
Cuomo, who was clearly thrilled for his friend, calling him the quintessential New Yorker, and said in part after a heckler had shouted something out, "That's 40 years in this town in front of the toughest audiences on the globe, as you heard from that gentleman there. You can't fool New Yorkers for 40 years." And also, Billy's close friend is Chaz Palminteri.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and he was there. And he said, "People talk about his artistry, but he's also a good man, and that's important. It's because of who he is and what he stands for. Billy is the working man."
The fact that he's the 100th performance, this residency at the Madison Square Garden. Will it continue?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. That's his 100th performance, but this is his 60th performance at the residency. So
okay.
But he's done it 100 times, so pretty amazing.
It's an amazing thing when you sell out Madison Square Garden
that
consistently.
Yep, and there you go. That is your music.
Like
news.
The Frank Caliendo experience.
It's very similar. Yeah. He's got Piano Man. I got Madden Man.
Madden Man.
I guess. I don't know.
Sing us that song.
Sing us the song. You're the Madman. Sing us the song tonight. Well, we're all in the mood for some circles right here. And I'm going to say Brett Favre 100,000 times. I've always...
That's Drunk Madden.
Could you imagine trying to get a drunk Madden away from
you? Oh, my
you?
God. I've always loved, though, that you've had him sort of subsist on turkey juice.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's in your veins. It coursing through the... I mean, a lot of the guys who do the drugs, they I use they don't use a syringe. I use a turkey baster.
I got turkey
baster track marks. They've been covered up by a lot of fat.
Turkey baster track marks.
Yeah, and yeah. I don't get... See, that's my whole life, too. People like, do some John Madden. And I have a reflex now. I don't even try to do it. It just happens. I just go, boom. And usually, that's enough.
Oh,
but then sometimes people are like, do a little more. I'm like, here's a guy getting a little greedy now. Do the turkey baster track marks bit. green clovers and purple horseshoes.
You are left with that.
I mean, that little leprechaun in that cereal. I mean, that guy was the Brett Favre of breakfast food.
For a stretch there, you had a Morgan Freeman reflex as well, which was, is it about that time?
Yes. About that time, we just realized what was happening here.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
So Frank is in town, but Philly's it's a place, you know, talking about...
it's an impression town.
Well, no, about Billy Joel and going to, you know, right there at his home and just boom, 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 playing all the time. Where's the city that you've absolutely played the most times?
Probably Minneapolis.
Really?
And I don't even know why. I grew up in Milwaukee, which is 5 hours away. But for some reason, I went and I lost in a contest. I hate comedy contests. There's nothing worse than that because it's like, I don't know.
But the person I
lost to was a great comic, a very funny guy, Nick Swartzen.
Oh, Nick is great. Yeah.
Nick went, and we became good friends, but he went off and did Aspen and
stuff
like that. And we had both just started. He was doing it for like 8 months. I was doing it for 6 or something like that. Or maybe it was reversed. I don't know. Maybe I'm just trying to make myself sound a little bit better in the story. But
he was just here, by the way. He was talking about getting a start, you know, and the whole thing.
Yeah, and so I just went to Minneapolis and started. I just hit it off.
It's
the
Aspen of.
Well, you know what? It really is the San Francisco of the Midwest. It's very artsy. It's
is it?
More,
you're right.
Yeah, more liberal, but it's also got like the Midwestern farmer type of people. So it's a really great mix, but it's a very cultural...
hipster farmers.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they both have beards to start with.
Hey, listen, no, to be honest, so you guys can understand, that's why our buddy Jim McGuinn is so successful there. He's a program director of the public radio station there and does huge, and it's because it's a very arty community.
And very eclectic listening. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean it's I and me with the Midwestern roots. But see, when I started out too, the Madden thing was so big that if I would go to an NFC city where Madden was doing football on Fox at the time, that would sell all the tickets because Kimmel used to bring me on and do the John Madden
constantly
before
yeah.
I even
had that gig, it was him bringing me on and pulling me out of like a barbecue with with Emmanuel Lewis or something like that. All I pictured was Nick's potato.
Nick's potato. I did that between turkey bastings.
So, yeah, but that I don't know what that is. And that's where I just hit it off in the Midwest a lot. And then I came out east and realized comedy, for the most part, you gotta hit them a little harder.
Yeah.
East Coast, especially New England, New York, it was very different. I just look at it like this. In Chicago, this is, they're still... It's amazing. In Chicago, they're still like, yeah, you know, our Bears won in 85. 92 Chicago Bulls. Unstoppable. Michael Jordan. And you guys over here, and I hear people all around Philly, like, we have not won a Super Bowl since last season. Like, listen, there hasn't been a Super Bowl since last season.
Chachi, I'm in Meach and Arnold's.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, there's a different kind of thing. And in the Midwest, there's this acceptance of losing at times. And as you get further east, people are like, no, we're going for the win.
Well,
this is gonna be it.
We're certainly paying our dues here. Yeah. So it's been glorious.
You talked about, you know, just doing the boom or whatever you need to get to appease the customer, so to speak, right, and get past the men. I was watching Dana Carvey talk to Seinfeld about people will come up and ask him to do George H.W. Bush, and he'll just say, not going to do it. And then that's enough.
That seems enough.
And then the person is happy. But, you know, people just must ask you to do Madden incessantly.
Constantly. And I coach flag football, and that's where it gets really
crap. Yeah, well, that's a recipe for disaster. Wow.
Yeah, they'll be like, I can't believe I can't wait to tell my friends I beat John Madden. You didn't. You didn't beat John Madden. I'm not the king. I'm the court jester of football. You don't understand. It's just amazing. But when you're around these coaches, they take the stuff, and I got to be like, here's a guy taking new sports a little too seriously. So I do find that I can do that with the men. I can kind of make. I used to do that with Charles Barkley too.
But they're perennials. I think because of their broadcasting deal, the sports would have been enough, but they transcended the sports, so they still remain pop culturally relevant.
I think,
you know?
Madden's not even in his own video game anymore.
I know.
I mean, that's the amazing thing. Mm-hmm. Is for me, that's why I want to get away from it. It's so old, and I don't mind doing it. I mean, it's a lot better than you suck. You know, so I've had people do that. When I was on in the baseball playoffs in 2007, when I was on every four seconds for my show, like somebody would be sliding into second base, and my picture would be on the base, and people were like, thank goodness there's dirt on that now. So it's that kind of thing that, you know, it's way better than you suck. So, I don't mind the little bits of John Madden, but it was... It is overwhelming at times, but I did a sketch with Ben Stiller a few years ago, and Ben Still, and
be still,
J. Piff knows him, and it was interesting because he's like, tell me about it. People always do the Zoolander face for him, and there's just certain things, and he's trying to do different things, but we spend most of our careers in the beginning pigeonholing ourselves to get known, and then you fight the rest of your career to do something.
But the
different
one thing you don't want to ever do is be in a situation where you're like, you know, like, just in, there's so many people who, as you know, I'm not telling anything you don't know, who would die to have that one thing that people love about, you know, their
but you do get tired. Yeah, you get tired of being just that. And even Kimmel had told me, it was the thing with Sarah Silverman, before he'd really taken off, he'd said the stuff about the Matt Damon song.
Effing Matt Damon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know how to say it.
That's right.
And then I keep wanting to call Sarah Silverman Shel Silverstein.
Shel Silverstein and Sarah Silverman, often confused.
Where the sidewalk ends. Sylvia's mother. Wow, I brought Dr. Huck references out of me. We're going awful school here, buddy. So that's what happens when you leave your hotel at 4:15.
Yeah.
You guys do it every day. I was on stage until like 10:30.
Yeah, that's the difference.
Yeah. Giving back.
That is big difference. I was watching the Robin Williams documentary. So.
Yeah,
which is damn good.
Well, great. That was a great pause. And died down.
Actually, you know, in that, and speaking of comedy, Steve, maybe you saw this. Robin Williams was talking about where he learned, because he was so hyperkinetic doing his craft, that it wasn't until that he worked with Steve Martin that he learned the art of the pause.
Yeah.
When doing comedy, that it can really impact.
Well, that's why you need a silent room. Like, that's what a lot of people don't understand in comedy. They want to do a comedy
show. Well, with
any
luck, that's what you'll get tonight.
Been there. But that silence, you need quiet to be able to pause.
Yes.
To have that in that tenseness to focus. Break it apart. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like people don't understand that they'll do a show and be like, well, people will be coming into the room like a corporate show. I'm like, no, you got to have them seated. It's got to be quiet.
Because
if people are talking, that's the hardest thing in the world is to perform for billionaires, because you can't tell a billionaire what to do. I did this. I was performing for the owners, the NFL owners at the Super Bowl.
Jeez.
This year. And there's nothing harder than that because because there's no way to relate. You're like, you ever been to Walmart? I own the competitor. Don't talk about it. What are you going to do? Like, you can't. For me, I found the thing I started doing. John Gruden, the owner of the Raiders, was in the back of the room, so I started talking to him like this: thanks for the checks, man. So, like, $10 million a year, that's a pretty good deal, you know. So I talked to that. So I go up and apologize basically to Mark Davis afterwards, the owner of the Raiders. I'm like, I'm sorry. He's like, can you believe I give John Gruden $10 million a year? I'm crazy. No, you're crazy TV Lenny from when I was a kid trying to sell TVs. He's like, you got to come do some John Gruden for the team. I'm like, I think you're going to have enough John Gruden.
Was Jerry Jones there?
Jerry Jones was there.
How was that?
He didn't talk to me. Every time I tried to talk to Jerry Jones, like, he had to have a conversation with somebody else.
Okay.
You can't see this. Are you guys on video right now?
Yeah. The webcam's on, yeah.
The webcam. He would do this thing, like, I'd be coming from over here, and he'd be like this. He'd be like, I got to talk to somebody else. Like, it was so blatant.
Right.
That it was like, no way does he really not. I believe that. Because he's got this thing where he can get people... like in an interview, like, they'll go at him at the beginning, and by the end of it, he'll have it changed to where they're almost sorry they're doing the interview. Be like, well, I believe as the owner, general manager, and essentially the coach of the Dallas Cowboys, we will do the best we can. And if you ask me today, is Jason Garrett our head coach? I will tell you, yes, today, Jason Garrett is our head coach. And if you ask us tomorrow if Jason Garrett is our head coach, I'll tell you, yes, today, Jason Garrett was our head coach.
And I'm sorry for even asking.
So it's that kind of thing. He's got that kind of. But I was just, I wanted to talk to him and just say hello. But it just,
yeah.
I don't know if he really didn't see me or if it. But I walked over three times, and each time was a huge Seinfeld look at the watch.
Oh, like, man,
what time is it?
Yeah. Being dismissed. I guess.
That's got to be a tough crowd.
They've got the money.
It's just that group. And I've done it before, like a charity golf thing with the, like, super rich people. You just can't tell rich people to be that rich of people.
Yeah.
Quiet. Mm-hmm. Because nobody tells them what to do.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to say, no billionaires at the show tonight.
No billionaires. Standing rule.
No billionaires. I'll cut them out.
Everybody else. You can go to punchlinephilly.com and get the ticket information. Frank, we're going to let you go.
Yep,
get some rest.
It. Thank you guys having
Thank
me.
You. Wonderful to see you as always.
Incredible. Tremendous job.
And tickets are, we don't know the story. I'm sure they're
There's probably about 25, 50, somewhere in there.
All right.
Left. Yeah.
Make sure you, if you've never seen Frank Caliendo, you got to see it.
Yeah.
And like I said, after the show, I'll be out there, as I like to call it, pivoting, talking to the people, taking pictures.
Double meet and greet.
Double.
I like that.
Double. Yeah. Well, I'm trying to get my brain's not working, but I was thinking, what's the in Animal House?
Double secret probation.
Yeah. Double secret. You guys are, thank you for having me, guys.
I'm going to go get the turkey baseball.
By the way, somebody texted in and they loved the Dr. Hook reference. So.
Oh, right. All right.
Nailed it.
There's another ticket.
His mother said, too busy. Too busy to come to the phone.
That's a first.
Sylvia's mother said,
oh, God.
She's trying to start a new life of her own. Sylvia's mother said, thank you for coming.
Frank Kelly and Punchline Philly tonight. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
93.3 WMMR presents Preston and Steve's Weekly Rush, a video highlights compilation gleaned from an entire week's worth of laughs. Available now in the Get Local section of Xfinity On Demand.
It is going to be a great night tonight. We are looking at temperatures around 85 topping off, which, by the time, you know, we'll be getting started, 6 o'clock, it'll actually start sliding the other way and start cooling off a tiny bit. So this is going to, I don't need that.
This is going to be absolutely perfect tonight for the Belly Flop Championship at Valley Beach.
And just to paint the picture, you can get in the pool and watch the Belly Flop Challenge if you like.
Yep,
a lot of people will be in the pool.
Hey, before I do any wrap-ups and thank yous and all those things, Marissa, you wanted to say hello to somebody or do a butt plug or whatever? I mean, not a butt plug, a shirt out.
Yeah, I guess it's a combination of all of them. I did a charity bowling event last night for the Colada Fund. Our friends at Dropkick Murphys, they were teaming up with Connor Barwin's Make the World Better Foundation.
Yeah.
And I got to bowl with a team of people from J&J Snack Foods, Suzanne and Gary, and I can't remember the other guy's name. I'm so sorry, guys. They were so nice, and his girlfriend. But, like, they make super pretzels and ices.
Super pretzels?
Yes.
What are super pretzels?
Like
it's made of titanium.
The brand that you buy at like the Wells Fargo Center or the Link.
I never look at the brand name.
Okay, and then
I just
ones,
buy pretzels.
They're the ones in the freezer at the supermarket too.
Okay, yeah, I don't get those either.
I got really excited.
I mean, I'm sure I do, but I don't know the brand name. I thank you.
You go to like Rita's. Yes. You know how like the
I do know them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's in the, they hang them. They hang in the little heated booth. Mm-hmm. I never knew that was called Super Pretzel. Yeah. Okay,
and they also make like the bagels and stuff for Wawa, like Oreo churros. Anyway, they were super awesome, so I just want to say hi to those guys because they were super sweet and huge fans of the show, everyone out there. So.
Well, we are thrilled to know that the Super Pretzel people are fans of the show because they're very good.
Yeah. There you go. I just want to mention, anybody listening right now, that yes, I know that OLPH school burned down yesterday. I'm well aware. You don't have to send me emails or pictures or anything like that anymore. I'm well aware.
And you are devastated.
It's
as you
devastating
said
news for me and thousands of other people. But, you know, thank you for reaching out. I appreciate that. Also wanted to mention that ever since we made the announcement where we unveiled the Team Rock and Rollers jerseys yesterday.
Yes.
I've had an influx of people joining my team, which is great. But I want to let you know that we're getting to a point right now where jerseys are not guaranteed anymore.
You know?
So we were asking people to join the team for months before that. We ordered team jerseys. I did order extra, but we're nearing the point where even if you join the team, you won't get a jersey. So if you're thinking about doing it, maybe like two or three left.
That's a good problem to have.
It is a great problem to have. Yes.
Okay.
How was Pinocchio's yesterday?
It was great. Yeah. Awesome. So thank you to Pinocchio's who we did a dine and donate yesterday all day and people showed up. And so thank you for anybody that showed up and to Pinocchio's for donating 20% of the proceeds there.
Cool. And I want to thank whoever sent in this text. It says, man, I've been an MMR. I've been listening to MMR since I was old enough to listen. And I've been here through the morning zoo and you guys have slayed it today. My ribs hurt. I really enjoyed it. For the show today, you deserve a standing ovation.
Oh, wow.
Says thank you.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I mean, I've enjoyed myself. I didn't know that somebody thought it was standing ovation worthy, but thank you very much. We appreciate that. So thank yous will continue in the form of thank you to Jeremy Piven.
Yay!
Who was here this morning, J-Piv.
J-Piv, as Frank Caliendo called him.
He will be at Punchline Philly tomorrow and Saturday and Sunday. So he's in town. He's in Philadelphia. You can see him all over town, I would imagine. He's in Philly this weekend. You can go to punchlinephilly.com to get tickets. And while you're there, check out the fact that Frank Caliendo is performing tonight at 7:30, and it's wonderful to have Frank by here, too.
One show tonight, right?
And then, we had earlier this morning Hank Flynn from Fox 29 reporter. He is going to be participating in our Belly Flop Championship tonight. He's, like, diehard about this.
He got it under his skin, and he's committed. He has been practicing.
And in advance, I want to thank Brian from Chorus Photography, who will be taking pictures. You want to check the Facebook page for the photos from the event. And also, am I not thanking this person?
You can thank whoever you want.
But don't thank them, but don't be sincere.
Well, there's just one that was left off of here. I want to thank our lifeguard ahead of time, listener Rachel Cotton,
who will be helping out.
And EMTs from the Lafayette Ambulance and Rescue Squad, who have been helping us out the past few years. So
thank God we haven't needed them,
but
it's essential to have them there.
Absolutely. And thank you to Pierre Robert for being Pierre Robert.
I'm standing.
You're still standing.
And I'm giving you...
Oh, a standing ovation. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate it.
Because I love you guys.
Oh.
And we love you. Doing the hand gesture.
Excellent. Okay.
Let's do the letter of the day. How about that?
Zoo.
All right.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
Now, the Daily Letter.
All right, the Preston and Steve Show is brought to you today by the letter...
V as in victory.
Man, we got a VIP four-pack of tickets and pit passes for... the Gander Outdoors 400 at Pocono Raceway, and it is July 27th through the 29th, the huge NASCAR race weekend for the whole family. Kids 12 and under are free Friday and Saturday and half price on Sunday. You bring your friends, bring your family, just bring it Pocono style.
Come out to the coast.
Tickets at PoconoRaceway.com. How you doing, man?
Excellent.
Nice.
Great program today. We'll have workforce blocks. We got Weezer coming up at the Camden BLT Center on Saturday, along with the Pixies. And so we'll get to a workforce block of the Weezers. And Jackie will have tickets to give away to that between 7 and midnight tonight, by the way. We'll have workforce block of Queen for Brian May's birthday, a block of Pearl Jam for Stone Gossard's birthday tomorrow. And our archive feature today, really cool. We'll take you back to the 70s, to the Tower Theater, and a live show that MMR did with Roxy Music.
Ooh. Wow!
Cool. We've been unveiling some amazing songs, stuff I didn't even know that we had. Sarah's done a phenomenal job pulling up great, great tunes.
Very cool. Roxy Music? It's amazing.
I just... I love that. Brian Ferry is just that romantic voice. Yes. You know, and that unique sound that they created. So that'll be the archive feature for today.
Excellent. All right. Well, let me take a moment to thank our sponsors. Preston and Steve Show is brought to you today by Dunkin' Donuts, the official coffee of the Preston and Steve Show. The Preston and Steve Show runs on Dunkin'. Also brought to you by Acme, the official supermarket of the Preston and Steve Show. And by Winter Airport Parking, the 2017 Reader's Choice Award winner. From the Philadelphia Inquirer. Tomorrow, I'm sure we'll recap the Belly Flop Championship from tonight. And we will have in our studio actor and comedic performer David Koechner.
Yes!
In the studio. I know him from Anchorman and a lot of great
Superior
movies.
Superior Donuts.
I just saw him on Conan last night. He played Thor. Conan plays Batman wanting to join the Marvel table at a high school. And David Koechner plays Thor. It's hilarious. I'll put it up on the website and we can watch it. Yeah.
Nice. All right, so we'll have that and many other things tomorrow. That's it. We're done. Rage on. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow again. Bye-bye.
The Preston and Steve love you, hate you line.
You mother may you burn in hell for your non-tipping ways. You.
Next message.
Yo! The guy counts his business on Route 554 with the sign of 93.3 Rock. Yeah, right, man. You're awesome.
Next message.
Let me tell you something about participation trophies. In the walking world, if you lose a bid, you don't get a participation trophy. You get fired. So instead of getting a participation trophy, practice harder and you'll win.
The Preston and Steve Love You, Hate You line.
Call 484-434-1333.
MMR rocks.
Brought to you by DellToyota.com and DellChevrolet.com.
Jack, sell them for less.